Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
All right, welcome to the Resolution Radio Network at resolutionrdo.com. You are listening to the Sonny Thomas Show, and I'm your host, Sonny Thomas. If you want to call in and listen now, it's area code 607-203-5423. It's area code 607-203-5423. You can follow us on various social media. We're on Gab at Sonny Thomas Show and at Resolution RDO. Same on Getter. Twitter, except on Twitter, you have to add one to Resolution RDO. And Parler is down at the moment. Apparently, Starboard has purchased Parler, and they didn't think it was good enough for to be a major platform for conservatives. So I guess they've got bigger pictures in the works. So Parler is once again compromised. So, and who knows how long it's going to be before it's back up and running. So that sucks, because I just got the damn Resolution Radio channel started on Parler. Now I got to wait for all that crap to pan out. So I'm sure the things are going on there. Plus, we're finding out that Twitter, good old Elon Musk, is not the benevolent anti-globalist that he claims he was. Apparently, through court documents, through, of all things, I think Jew Laura Loomer was talking about how she was censored on Twitter, and which, again, is another form of election meddling, because she was a legitimate congressional candidate, as well as many other people who have some sort of elected capacity. I was shit-canned off of Twitter back in 2017, and my Thomas for Ohio account was specifically for my constituents when I was in the Warren County GOP. So, again, that should not be allowed to happen. But because my phone number is used in all my accounts, my music account and my elected official account were all shut down just because I had the same phone number. So that's a whole other issue there. So, again, that is, in my view, election meddling. That's no different than stealing votes, and that should be completely frowned upon. Because when you're actually elected by the people, you should be heard. And no matter what format you use, it should be allowed to be accessible by whoever wants to see it, whether friend or foe alike. So that's another problem in and of itself. But we see Elon apparently has absorbed Twitter into X, which is, I guess, his main actual entity that he's created, probably his main holding company. And also, he is in the process of promoting his artificial intelligence thing, which is going to be X.AI. So I think there's a lot more stuff going on here. Plus the fact you got all the neural net stuff that he's been pushing and things of that nature. So yeah, and a lot of people brought up some legitimate arguments for Elon Musk, asked some questions about why certain people are still banned on Twitter. Why not start fresh and then go after people that post things? But what gets me is that Muslims can still post stuff on how they want to kill infidels, or even Jews want to do things to the Gentiles, but it's okay. And even pushing pedophilia. But if you actually question any of that, you get shit-canned, you get shadow banned, and you get completely removed, which is another form of assassination. If they assassinate you in the virtual world, then they will do it in the real world, because the fact that they destroy your credibility, destroy your presence, and it's a lot easier to dispose of you, especially do the old Clinton style of Arkanside, where you basically go commit suicide, execution style, with two double taps in the back of the head. I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody can hold a pistol and do that. If you do, congrats to you, but you ain't going to live to tell about it. So that's another issue in itself. But anyways, so we got a lot of other issues going on there as well. Also, you can also follow Sonny Thomas Show on Wimkin, which is another alternative to Facebook. And I think they have like a pages features on there, but I have not had time to explore that yet. I'm going to look into it, actually. So apparently free speech is definitely popular on Wimkin, and to the point where you can't probably download it from the Play Store. So they are trying to suppress their freedom of speech as well. They're also coming up with an alternative to TikTok. I think it's called Reelster. So they're pushing that as well. So, and you're starting to see a lot more conservatives coming on and endorsing Wimkin as an outlet for conservative speech. It's just so sad that we have to fight for our own freedom of speech, which is enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution. But liberals don't follow the Constitution. They redact a lot of it and only enforce certain parts of it, especially when it threatens them. So that's the problem. So, but anyways, when it comes to free speech, though, There are many people out there on the web who really strive to showcase a lot of things and try to actually really get down to the crux and down to the brass tacks of what's going on. One of them is Jan Lamprecht, who's actually from South Africa, and he also has an excellent job on his website, history.com, and I know several of my guests have actually mentioned that website by name as a site that they regularly frequent, and you can go to that and check out many stories and videos. He also posts a lot of videos as well, and so it's been a while since we've had Jan on here for a while, and I always enjoy his point of view because he has a unique perspective. He tries to be as objective as possible. And what the most point is, he really showcases what's going on. For example, on a website, Hate Speech Hell, South Africa, click here for info. And you can go on there and find a lot of the interesting stuff that's going on here. You also get, as soon as you log on, you get a pop-up for a free ebook, The Great Jewish Mask. I'm definitely going to be sending me that for sure. And I always enjoy reading different stuff on here because a lot of times the freedom of information to get all different points of views, because you have three different books, the truth is always in the middle. And so that's my biggest problem with like my local library. So like have a book on Ronald Reagan, but it's talk about all the things that he wasn't that good at or didn't do or things did wrong in his presidency, but you don't see a book on what he did right during his presidency, you know? It diminishes his legacy. Where I want a book that says pro and con and then something in the middle. Because a lot of us, now that we look back with the prism of history on Ronald Reagan, we see there's a lot of things he didn't do because he was controlled by a full neocon and often many times Jewish cabinet setup. And then, of course, run by CFR members such as George H.W. Bush. But there's a lot of things that Reagan did. He lowered the tax brackets down to 6 tax brackets from like 20-something. And he helped bankrupt the Soviet Union with Star Wars. Whether it was ever actually really true, was it a fabrication, or just the thought of it that essentially is the video game Missile Command, that everything they put into those rockets to attack the U.S. or the West can be shot right out of the sky, completely destroyed what was left of the Soviet economy. Because they have almost entirely guns economy, no butter. And so basically you find out that everything you put in your weapon systems now can be shot down. You're kind of screwed. You're kind of screwed. It took 10 years for the Bolsheviks to completely destroy Russia and wipe out most of its natural resources because, in fact, in full collectivism and totalitarianism like that, you cannot utilize the full benefits of your resources when you completely put them all into one spot. It doesn't work that way. And the communists still haven't learned. They still do the same damn thing. And these socialists are doing the same crap of creating soft communists through our youth. But this is how they do it. Ayn Rand warned about this in her books. She also warned about the stuff that was like growing up in behind the Soviet Union. Harold Zeger talked about in his book, Freedom's Nightmare, what it was like and how they brainwashed the kids into communism ideology, thinking that the West is so bad and corrupt and everything else. Now, there's some things about that that is true. But at the same stroke, you look at the prism of, do they ever talk about Benito Mussolini and Italian fascism? No, that is one topic they really don't touch. How did he rise to power? All you have is what? I even found a half a decent documentary on a topic. I have found one shitty ass movie with Antonio Banderas back in 1993 that was almost 3 hours long, okay? But it was basically the rise of Mussolini and never talked about what he did after he got into power and the black shirts and what they did. No, it ends right there. Maybe they're talking about doing a sequel and it never happened. I don't know. But the issue is that they don't talk about what he did. What was the positive aspects of fascism? You know, what was the things that he was really shooting for? Why did it come to prominence? You know, who were they up against? Seemed like National Socialism with Adolf Hitler in Germany. How did his party come to prominence? They never talk about the 1920s. They very rarely talk about the 1930s. Oh, no, we have to fast forward everything to 1909 in September when they invaded Poland. And there was a valid reason why they invaded Poland, because ethnic Germans are being wiped out. And as a full German nationalist, he would look like a fraud if he didn't do something about it. But that's the same shit that they've pulled on Putin to go into those two provinces to stop the ethnic cleansing of Russians and Russian-speaking people. And then he's trying to point out he's going after these particular elements. They make it look like he's the next Hitler. So that's the biggest issue I have. I hate it when, especially conservatives, when they talk about government overreach and authoritarianism, they always compare everything to Hitler. They never talk about Stalin. They never talk about Lenin. They never talk about Mao. They never talk about Pol Pot. These are totalitarian leaders, and they're like embraced by the left here. I mean, they never talk about FDR like my grandparents did, but they worship Churchill like he was a god that saved the West. But it wasn't for FDR, Churchill would have been defeated within 6 months. So, I mean, yeah, go about that. And then the war crimes they committed to the German people, absolutely unacceptable, and they've never answered for it. But now they are, thanks to the clergy plan, where they're bringing all these migrants into Europa, and they're just completely overwhelming the systems, which is the Clower to Piven strategy. So similar situations have happened in South Africa since the end of apartheid. Many people that saw it coming left. The amount of brain drain that South Africa had is incredible because of the fact that they saw the writing on the wall and they said, I'm getting the fuck out of here because I know it's going to happen. And so a lot of people started leaving early before apartheid ended. And with movies like Lethal Weapon 2 with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, where he keeps pushing this, end apartheid sticker on his damn refrigerator door and then making it look like the guys that were there were basically Nazis and stuff. I mean, this is just absolute bullshit. But that's the type of propaganda because Richard Donner, who produced that film, was a Jew. The same guy that did the Superman films also did the Lethal Weapon films, and Richard Donner was actually Jewish. So there you go. You have everything you need to see right then and there. But a lot of stuff that's happened after the main parties took over in South Africa is absolutely incredible. What you're looking at is a petri dish on how the globalists want to do the West. Not to mention, anyone has a general observance of blacks and how they handle power when they get it. I saw it firsthand when I was doing radio TV broadcasting, and I had to film the school board meetings. The majority of the school board and the superintendent was always black. When you're just walking into the career center, you see all the cars out front. They make sure they look like they're posh, man, like driving Cadillacs and Buicks and BMWs. Like, yeah, they're hot shit. Oh, make sure you got a license plate where it says, like, Miss Rice or something like that. Like, Miss is like a title. I mean, seriously, it's like they act like they're hot shit. You always got to make sure they got their bling bling on or nice looking suits. Oh, they look so ghetto fabulous. But when you actually try to talk shop with them, they can't even hardly utter two words. And the other thing that amazes me the most, as a fair amount of fact to that, is I've seen blacks that have never lived in the South for generations, lived up here or even in Detroit. They still have a Southern drawl. Like, they always talk about every child that needs to get an education and shit like that. I'm sitting there going, man, these fuckers mangle the English language so bad you can't understand it. And then you listen to their ghetto speak, it's all short derivatives of those words because they can't speak the language. And then what's really sad is when I see blacks that are okay or somewhat prominent, when a racial issue comes up, like the Trayvon Martin shooting and shit like that, all of a sudden you see the real colors come out. They show, as I would say, they truly show their nigger shine. You really get to see who the fuck they are. And it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I mean, a lot of us whites aren't raised to be racist. We learn to be once we interact with these people. But in South Africa, it is much, much worse. At least here, the average black has an IQ of about 85, where in South Africa, the average black could have an IQ of 65, which is my dog is smarter than the average Kaffir. So, I mean, that says a lot, man. But the worst part of it is if the corruption isn't bad enough and how they're looting all the financial resources, as well as since the brain drain is gone. Many people can't fix the infrastructure in South Africa. It's very quickly deteriorating. Eskom, which is the main power grid system down there, having continuous blackouts because they're selling their energy to other countries, as well as pocketing money right off the top. It's absolutely amazing the corruption going on down there, but yet there's no international outrage. I don't know anyone who could do any business with anyone from South Africa when you can't even turn the damn computer on or even be able to use your cell phone because all the power is gone. Even some of their hospitals are starting to have blackouts because of the fact that they're supposed to be void of that, but they don't care. It's obvious they don't give two shits. Jan has actually covered this extensively in a lot of stuff on his website as well as his video features. So I would definitely encourage you to check those out. And like I said, it's been a while since he's been on the show, but we always enjoy his commentary. Hang on one second. Am I missing something here? No, I got it. Okay, I submitted my thing for his book, that's for sure. Okay, so we always enjoy his point of view because he has a very fresh perspective, not just it from South Africa, but he also sees what's going on in other places in the West. And he sees a very similar overlay of exactly what they are doing in other Western countries because they've already done it in South Africa. So, Jan, welcome back to the St. Thomas Show.
Hi there, Sonny. It's awesome to be back on your show. Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, like I said, I see you in some other programs, and I know other programs sometimes are scared to bring you on because they know you speak the truth and afraid that their handlers may not like that. But here on the Resolution Radio Network, we try to get to it as much as possible. And I'm one of those people, I call things as I see it. A lot of people are shocked because, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. But where I come from, you call it as you see it. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and swims like a duck, it's a freaking duck. It's not a waterfowl. You know, this use of extra soft language of how they want to keep on trying to dress and things, and they're how they're polarizing words. Like, I can't even call someone retarded now that acts stupid. That might offend a retard. So, I mean, that's the type of shit that's going on here. But quite frankly, I don't give a damn. And I even had a host of another show a few years back, Ken Gividen, who was on the show here recently as well. He said, you know, I've interviewed a lot of white nationalists. I've interviewed, NS guys. I've interviewed other people. And civil nationalists and everything else. But I have to say, Sonny, I see the viewpoints change a lot, but you never change. Why is that? I said, well, quite frankly, man, I'm comfortable in my own skin. Besides, I call things the way I see it. And on my block, you call it what it is. And the same stroke is, I don't mess with you if you don't mess with me. But if you piss in my yard, I cut your dick off. I mean, that's how I roll, man. That's just how it is in my neighborhood, okay? You don't park in front of someone else's house. You don't mess with their dog. You sure as hell don't mess with their daughters. And if you do, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you, or you're going to be turned into a eunuch. So, I mean, you've got a choice here. You can leave things be, or you can FAFO. You know what I mean? Fuck around and find out. And I think that mentality is what they're trying to suppress. They're trying to suppress our whites' natural instinct to want to survive and thrive. I just saw a video on a Telegram channel yesterday. And it's this normal looking white girl. She's got some freckles on her. She's not too bad looking, you know. And she's like, oh, I'm proud to be white. I, matter of fact, I am a goddess. I said, look at these freckles. Look at this profile. Say, I'm proud to be white. I'm proud of my white heritage and I'm proud of my white accomplishments. Why should I hate myself?
Excellent.
She's like, I like black people. That doesn't mean I hate them. That doesn't mean I have to go, do things with them, but I can at least respect them as a people. But yet I can't be proud on social media, but they can be proud and say, I hate white people. But I can't go in there and say, I hate black people. Oh, no, I'll get, derezzed. So, I mean, that's one of the things I appreciate. This is a girl that had an aha moment somewhere. She looks like to me she's probably in her early 20s, but she had an aha moment. And more of our people are starting to realize, but they're afraid to speak out. But they're looking for is people like me, like you, Jan, and other people to say, hey, not only should you speak out, it's your natural law right to do so, and that's enshrined in our Constitution. And not only that, but when we find out historyreview.com and all this history revisionism crap that's going on, we need people like Jan to really explain what actually happened and why they're being covered up. I mean, I can't even tell you, Jan, how many people I've seen on Facebook that has watched Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told by Dennis Wise, and they got it. Nothing on any 9/11 truth thing ever really woken them up like that documentary did, because they go, why was I never told about this? Hitler isn't a bad guy. He actually was a leader of his people. I mean, he's doing what a head of state would have done. And not only that, but it goes to show you that, especially in the short term at least, National Socialism seems to work as a political ideology. I mean, it went from an almost collapsed economy to full employment in 2 years, while here the Great Depression went on for another 10. I mean, it shows you something obviously worked over there. And the first thing that Hitler did was he abolished usury. He abolished it, which the church had abolished it back in the 1100s. But then they started allowing it to happen again. because in Jews, they're allowed to charge usury on non-Jews. So it's okay in their view, and it just kind of transpired from there. So, I mean, again, you start connecting the dots, you know, all of a sudden you start stepping away and you see the mosaic, and what do you see? You see the merchant man with holding the clasped hands. That's exactly what you see. And I think South Africa is a prime example of what's happening to the rest of the West.
Well, Sonny, the one thing I want to say about your commentary and stuff is that these Jews are very afraid of whites, and particularly afraid of white males. And if you look carefully at all these weird values and things that are coming into the system, and now you can't say this, and then you can't say that, and you could offend this person, it's really all about shutting up white people, especially white
yes.
men. And you see, a white man would call it as he sees it, and whites would even go and say, you know what? Those people need to be executed, and that's a crime, and this guy needs to be thrown in jail, and that guy needs to be hung from a tree. And they don't want any of that stuff, because they know that they'll be on that list of people that need to be smashed. So, you know, they are so good and, well, so practiced from literally it's thousands of years of lying, my friend. That's really what it boils down
yes.
to.
Well, not that, but when I was rewatching that clip from that Soviet defector, I think it was Breganov, he was talking about ideological subversion. And we're talking about how people like the Jane Fondas and Daniel Ellsbergs and stuff would never be allowed in their society. And that if they did try to come forth and say, oh, I'm liberal and this, that, and the other, blah, 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 they would be squashed pretty quickly. As a matter of fact, I would actually deduce what would happen. Ellsberg would have probably been shot immediately. And what they did in Russia was they would bill your family for the bullets. Secondly, someone like Jane Fonda, because she's the daughter of a prominent Hollywood actor for many years, she did the same type of crap like she did here, where she basically hobnobbed with the North Vietnamese. That's treason. Why that woman was never thrown in prison after that, I never understood it. But what would really happen with someone like her, she would have been black bagged. They probably would have taken her to some subterranean basement somewhere, probably gang rape her, and then torture her, and then kill her, and then make sure they show. I mean, we look at what Muslims do. I mean, it's not the stuff they do all the time. How many videos they show where they had all these people in orange jumpsuits out there, like on a beach or something, and they go and decapitate every single one of them? That's how they deal with things. So that's the type of thing. It was interesting because, the fact, in Poland, living under the communist boot for so long, as well as the Eastern European bloc, they don't want Muslims in there because they've been under forced oppression for 70 years. And they know Muslims are going to do that and worse, much worse. And they don't want that shit in their countries. That's why they keep telling the EU, we don't want these migrants in here, because they're not coming here for better life. They come here to bleed us dry and then attack our people. We don't want that shit. But yet the EU keeps pushing it and pushing it. So, I mean, again, what's going to have to happen is people are going to rise up in Brussels, and they're just going to have to topple the government, say the EU is completely illegitimate, and we need to just, yes, if you're going to have a union, fine, but we need to do it the right way, by having actual elected officials that actually do a pro-European policy, not a globalist European policy.
Yeah. Sonny, the only thing that I see that is the long-term game and that is going to work for us is revolution. I think this is the bottom line of where we're going, and it's the only thing that makes sense, where more and more white people just get up and just start fighting back. And I must say, everything I've seen, whether it's COVID or the Ukraine war or anything that's happened, the stolen election, all the Trump-related stuff, the one thing that I'm noticing is that every single one of these big things that's going down, it's causing lots of people to start rebelling against it. I've even seen scientists starting to talk out and starting to rebel against things. There's a scientist, a British biologist, his name escapes me now, but he actually went and he said, you know what, I'm a biologist, and he's a famous author and everything. And he says, I'm a biologist, and there are only two sexes, period. And you know, and I'm seeing other scientists and people also popping up and starting to talk. And you know, COVID has brought out doctors and scientists and professors of biology. I must tell you that the more that Jews stir the pot with all their weird Jewish nonsense, I'm seeing lots of things. I'm seeing lots of things working against them, and I'm seeing more and more whites actually just waking up. It's awesome.
Well, not that, but they, especially with Obamacare getting passed, which is essentially the nationalization of our healthcare system, it's really gone to hell. And many doctors are speaking out against it. Many of them will not take Obamacare patients at all. But they since they still have the ability to do it, and if they're forced to do it, they say, okay, fine, fuck you, I'll just retire. Bye-bye. I'll just take my tools and go away. And so we're going to start having, again, a brain drain of skilled people here who can do stuff. And, you know, that people don't seem to realize every time that you create a wall, they're either going to find a way around it, under it, or they'll pull a vote over it some way, unless you've really done the research to stop them from doing so, such as the Berlin Wall. I've actually seen a section of that on one of my travels. Someone had brought one of the sections of it to that park. And when you look at it, it's pretty intimidating. I got a picture of me in front of it. That thing is probably at least 20 feet tall. It's got a nice rounded top to it, so you can't use any type of grappling hook or anything like that to it. And I'm assuming they probably have Constantine wire over the top of it when it's all put together. But and it's also got a nice, like a long keel down the middle of it on the base, so it stays in the ground very solid. So again, you can't go up over it, you can't go around it, you can't go under it. And again, here's the thing: nobody was trying to break into East Germany. It was to keep people from getting out. But yet all the stuff they had in there afterwards was in case that wall busted. They had all sorts of mines and tanks and all sorts of anti-personnel things into place. But no one was trying to break into the Iron Curtain, and people were trying to get out. And I was watching some documentary on Ronald Reagan some years back, and they were showing like people running for the fences and stuff and getting caught by the barbed wire, but not caring because they just wanted to get the hell out. I mean, you know, general, man's natural state is to be free, not to be controlled or oppressed. And what gets me the most is the fact that as long as people have the bread and circuses, they will take the tyranny as it comes. I mean, I've seen it too much here with the welfare being not only so mass distributed, but it's become generational. It's become an entitlement. But what they don't seem to realize in the short-sightedness is that whatever government gives you, it can also take away.
Well, you know, Sonny, the other thing that I've been looking is at like mega trends, where I'm looking at things that indicate that lots of people are changing. And I'm seeing that, for example, lots of people are leaving their jobs, the Great Resignation. And I'm also seeing that lots of men are leaving jobs and are changing. I think that there are huge changes underway, and the fact that people, you know, also COVID has brought us work from home, and in South Africa, whites have also been driven out of the system. So whites are being driven out of jobs and things by the blacks. So the other thing that I'm seeing among the younger people as well is everybody is starting to hustle. And they're starting to run their own little businesses and things. And so what I'm seeing is like a lot of big scale change, but these things where vast numbers of whites are resigning and vast numbers of men are starting to do all kinds of different things. And there are women complaining that they can't get men, that they were feminists and now they can't get a man now that they want one. And all that kind of stuff, but the big thing that really hits me is the job stuff, where people are just quitting. They're quitting and they're not going back. And it's telling me, Sonny, that we're reaching a point where very quietly people in on a massive scale are changing now. People are changing. And for example, even here in South Africa, you know, where the Boere Afrikaners are very they've been very closed society, not really looking outwards. Now, because of the internet, they're all on the internet. And now the beauty is that they're starting to get exposed to American ideas and to things coming from Europe and everything, but especially from the free speech of America. And so like when COVID came to South Africa, people were onto COVID quite quickly. Hey, there was a pushback. The pushback came from whites. The government forced us to wear masks and things, but the pushback came from whites, and eventually we managed to get rid of these stupid masks. We had to wear these stupid masks for 2 years. It was illegal to go out in public without a mask. I'm so glad the masks are gone. And that to me was the nastiest thing. There were people who had, they were also trying to force vaccinations. There was a lot more pushback on the vaccination thing. And, I'm liking the way that whites are interacting and big ideas are moving. And there are whites in South Africa who are starting to think in other ways. They're starting to see what's coming from America and so forth. And I'm enjoying it. I'm finding it wonderful to see the interaction between us on a large scale. Because when I was looking into the work of Professor Carol Quigley, is known for the sort of liberal books that he wrote. But the book that people don't really study is Carol Quigley's The Evolution of Civilization. That's his actual academic book that he wrote. And he's actually not a bad guy. He's actually a Christian, a liberal Christian. And he's not a bad guy, actually, as a person. You can see it. But in his Evolution of Civilization, he's very liberal. But he points out that things change when you get large masses of people that come into contact with each other. And that is what's happening with all of us in the age of the internet. I must tell you that you've not by any means seen the last of the impact of the internet. The internet is moving forward and changing the world totally. And the white right must not lose faith in itself. Just because Jews and billionaires and liberals are busy smashing down on the white right, deplatforming people, the fact of the matter is that if it wasn't for the white right, lots of other things could never have taken place. Take, for example, COVID. Take, for example, COVID and the vaccination rebellion. If it wasn't for the white right that had the websites, the media, etc., those doctors and nurses, that's where they got lots and lots of support from. And that helped them. And when they were deplatformed and thrown off other platforms, they moved onto platforms that have been created originally by the white right or that are related to the white right. So, you know, the white right must really see itself. The white right in many ways is like the tip of the spear or the tip of the sword. It's we on the white right, we're on the bleeding edge of the battle, and we're the ones that get beaten up the most. But if we aren't there, and if we don't pioneer our way forward, then other things wouldn't be able to happen. And that is a real feather in the cap that the white right can put in its cap.
Well, not that, but you're talking about some of the other stuff that's going on. Another big bubble that's getting ready to burst due to COVID is the amount of business real estate that's getting ready to collapse because of the fact that a lot of these businesses realize they don't need to pay for all this real estate anymore. You don't need these big buildings. And I mean, look at the New York Times. They had to shrink so much because people realize that their the stuff that pushes is just crap. that people stopped subscribing to the New York Times to the point where they're actually the building they call the old gray iron lady or whatever. They're having to go and start leasing out floors to businesses because of the fact that's the only way they can keep paying their property tax.
Fantastic.
Because of the fact that no one's buying New York Times anymore. It's crap.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So a lot of people are working at home. Yeah, they're working at home. But, you know, again, a lot of companies, matter of fact, I've worked for companies where they have one day a week where it's green day, where all the people that do a lot of their computer work for, you know, their CSR stuff or whatever, they stay at home one day a week so they don't have to drive to work, but they still get paid for a full day's operation. So that I see is trending as well. So I could see two or three times a week where someone would be doing that. I know his wife would stay home 4 days a week to do a lot of her stuff. She did like CAD CAM type of things. And that, but on Fridays, she'd have to go down there, obviously, just so she's physically there and able to attend meetings or whatever, or just make sure everybody's on the same page. But the bottom line is 4 days a week, she would sit at home and do all of her stuff on the computer.
No, there's lots of things changing, and I like it. You see, the thing to keep in mind is that for decades, the whole Western world was under this liberal propaganda from these Jewish sources. And so they had decades where it was a one-way street, it was TV and radio, and you couldn't talk back. And they just pumped their bullshit onto everybody for decades. Well, now it's changed because now the little guy can talk back and he's got a platform and he can change his mind and he can go somewhere else. People can set up their own channels, their own websites, etc. And I must tell you, I think that this trend, I actually think that we are heading into a trend where the entire world is going to become very noisy and that more and more people, including even the quiet Europeans, where more and more people are just going to come out and they're just going to start making noise. Because until now, it's been Jews, liberals, and blacks screaming their heads off all the time. But I think you're going to see white noise coming back. The real white noise from the European people is going to come back and it's going to grow more and more. Because I can see that, even, like I say, even scientists, are starting to get tired of all kinds of things. I'm seeing all sorts of strange things.
Right, but you see, like in the Netherlands, the farmers are revolting. They're blocking up spaces. Same with in France with the Yellow Vest protests. You know, all that stuff has been happening. Even in Deutschland, I've seen recently there was a major protest about some stuff that was going on. The government was pushing. Plus the fact that the Ireland, there's a big, huge pushback with them bringing all these immigrants in and shoving them into their communities. People don't like it. I mean, in England, for example, they're almost completely 50%, minorities in Great Britain. That it's pretty much gone now, and because of their liberal policies and shaming whites for doing stuff, as well as their gun control policies, they've had in place for well over 50 plus years. I can't understand that. For example, there's an old John Wayne movie. Is it McHugh? I forget which one it is, but it was one of the more recent ones in the early 70s where they're trying to make him more like a Dirty Harry type of guy. And they're trying to change his role a little bit from doing cowboy stuff. And he was, it was Cahill. I think it was Cahill. Anyway, so he's escorting, as a U.S. Marshal, he's escorting a prisoner over to Britain and to drop them off to their authorities there at Scotland Yard or what have you. And of course, he carries a pretty good sized pistol, probably like a 357 Magnum or whatever. And during their lunch, the guy that he's talking with is almost disgusted at the fact that he actually has that pistol on him at the table. He's like, you know, we don't allow guns here. He's like, well, I'm sorry did you feel that way, but first of all, I'm a U.S. Marshal. I'm assigned to bring this prisoner to here, and I've sworn an oath to a Constitution of the United States. And I also have my Second Amendment rights as a citizen, as well as a law official, to make sure I'm armed at all times until my job is done, and then go back home. And even then, I always sleep with my gun by my bed. So I mean, you know, it's part of our culture. And but just to see the disgust in this guy's eyes, that this, the John Wayne character is actually, carrying a nice big pistol under his jacket. But you think the criminals are going to care? No, they're all going to be concealed carry so they can go up and just shoot people whenever they want. I mean, we actually was just watching the second of the trilogy. First, you got Olympus Has Fallen with the possible scenario where they attack the White House. And then the second one is London Has Fallen, where they poisoned the Prime Minister of Great Britain to bring all the heads of state to the funeral, and that's when they try to decapitate all the heads. And I'm sitting there going, "Wow!" I said, "This is exactly what you would do if you're trying to have a new world order takeover, when you try to cut all the heads of the snakes off." I mean, people don't realize they don't talk about World War I that much and the causes and effects of it. World War I was the decapitation of the old world order. In other words, they want to overthrow as many monarchies as possible. And of course, a lot of the monarchies of Europe at that time were all connected to Queen Victoria. I mean, even Kaiser Wilhelm and Tsar Nicholas were first cousins. They look like identical twins, but they were first cousins. But that was the whole point, was to wipe out the monarchies, because the fact that no monarch would relinquish their power as a king and would not genuflect to a central power. I mean, that definitely is showcased back in Henry VIII when he was trying to get a divorce from his first wife, and the church wouldn't allow it. He says, "Okay, fine, screw you then. I'll start my own damn church. And so it won't stab me in the back. I'll become de facto head of the Church of England. How do you like that?" And so he got all the wives he wanted. So, I mean, that was the thing. And it was because Anne Boleyn had given him this little book that was basically a king has a divine right to rule his kingdom as he pleases. And so that was when the church was pretty much the central government of all of Europe, and basically telling the many of the kingdoms, "You can do about anything you want in your kingdoms, but there's some things you just cannot do." I was like, "Who the hell are you?" But like I said, that was the whole thing, was to eliminate all that resistance so that way they could turn all their countries into democracies, and the democracies are easily bought and able to switch one way or another. And then even now, when we invaded the Middle East into Iraq, and all this, "Oh, we're going to bring democracy to your country." Well, that means corrupted parliaments. That means, coalitions. That means you'll never get anything done. There'll always be in debate. And then when you don't want shit done and they get a majority, they push all these laws that are the antithesis of what your country is founded upon. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, very interesting. America is based on the Roman Empire, and I don't know if you know this. They don't really talk about this much, but the Roman Empire was actually the most militarized society of whites that ever existed. It's
Oh, yeah.
something that's kind of hidden away, and you only pick it up here and there. And in that sense, America is very good that you guys have still got this gun thing and this weapons thing, because that's always going to be your saving grace. And as bad as it is in South Africa, and the blacks tried to disarm us, they tried to totally disarm us about 15 or 16 years ago. They made it so bad that about 90%. More than 90% of the gun shops in South Africa had to shut their doors. And they really tried to make many moves to get us to stop applying for gun licenses. It was ultimately about stopping the whites. But do you know that people actually also fought back legally and fought back in the courts and everything? And as much as they tried, they didn't quite succeed. And I suspect, it's my guess, that although we aren't as well armed as you Americans, we're nowhere even close to being as well armed as you Americans, we are probably better armed than the British, I would think.
Oh yeah, well, not that, but at least you got some countryside you can run into and hold out. Where, Britain, I mean, Britain's fallen a long time ago. I mean, it's funny, as much as they tried to attack Hitler and everything else, a lot of the things he said that would happen if Germany lost has happened. And as a matter of fact, when you watch that documentary, he talks extensively in a segment about 1920s Berlin on how it became absolute Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, it was absolute crazy. We'd have mom and daughter prostitution teams. You had bestiality, trans stuff. They even had sex changes back then. I mean, all sorts of crazy shit that was going on. And now you look at this crap and you go, this is another reason why they don't want you to know history, because it's like, oh, wow. You know, what would give a reason for anyone to even think about voting National Socialists in Germany at that time? Because none of the other democratic ones had any ideas or any real solutions. And again, you don't find that many books on exactly how the National Socialist economy worked. It was basically a labor-based currency. It wasn't gold-backed. It was labor-based. In other words, you work for a dollar, you earn a dollar, you know? So, I mean, they unfortunately, it started building a deficit fairly quickly shortly afterwards. But, I mean, it wasn't the same as a gold-backed. And that, you know, if you ever read The Wealth of Nations, a nation's true worth is how much gold it has in reserves. The fact, in our case, at Fort Knox has not been audited in decades, if at all. It says a lot, because I think that's why Bretton Woods was set up. And why Nixon took us off the gold standard, because what gold we had left, nations were cashing it in because the value of the dollar had already started to go down pretty bad. And so they wanted actual gold for their money. And Nixon had put a stop to it because it would have bankrupted this country overnight. But really, once the Federal Reserve got in, it only took 16 years to bankrupt this country. 16 years from 1913 to 29.
Wow.
It wiped us out. And then the FDR comes in a few years later and makes it illegal for Americans to own gold and silver, because they had to confiscate as much as they could to refill their coffers so the dollar wouldn't collapse. Because if you have a gold-based currency, you have to seize all the gold from all the sources you can get it. So it wasn't until the 80s when Reagan was in that it made it legal for us to own gold again. But that took 50 years.
Well, Sonny, when I look at what these Jews are doing everywhere, it looks to me like ultimately what we've got is we've got like, let's call it Jewish civilization, and Jews are just ramming Jewish values and all related garbage, whether it's sexual degeneracy of all kinds and flavors, along with easy money, along with all kinds of other stuff. They follow the same pattern everywhere, and when I look at life nowadays, I tell people that there are so many similarities between the 2020s and the 1920s. There are so many things that are similar, including an awakening, because the 1920s was also an awakening. I don't think people grasp how much of a shock people, whites in Europe and America and the Western world, had when they realized that Jews had been responsible for the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. That was a big shocker. That was a big shocker. And that is what caused fascism and National Socialism and all that kind of stuff to get momentum. And the other thing about Hitler is, you can say what you like about anybody who claims to have fought communism, but Mussolini fought communism, and Hitler was the greatest.
Yes.
Hitler was the greatest communist killer of all time. He fought communism in Germany. Italy and Germany helped Spain to fight communism in Spain. And by the way, look and see who brought communism to Spain. It was coming from the Soviet Union. It was coming from Britain as well. The commies.
Yeah, because of London. City of London is where the central bankers of all the Jews are at.
I'm telling you. And, you know, so if you look at Hitler and Mussolini, they were the only guys who were, like, really trying to save Western civilization.
Yes. And again, people don't want you to see that. But not only that, but look at a lot of the social people in the 1920s as well. You had the suffragette movement, which is women demanding rights to be able to vote and everything else. And plus, they were changing a lot. They were starting to do a lot more masculine things, such as it became more acceptable for women to smoke. For example, that was always seen as a
Yes.
male thing. So they would get the long filters. They'd put their cigarettes on and smoke, and made it trendy to do that. They cut their hair shorter, which has always been the identity of a woman, especially her youth and vitality is her long hair, things of that nature. So the little short bobs became more popular with the little hats. There's all sorts of crap that went on there, and the biggest thing is people don't realize is the same groups that pushed the suffragette movement, which actually, you know, a lot of women right to vote, was the fact that it was also the abolitionists that was forcing the North to eventually go after the South. That was the same shit. It was the same exact people. But another reason why they pushed the suffragette movement was twofold. One is to divide the houses, because they know women, once psychology became an accepted science, you know, guys like Freud and stuff out there were, you know, big time thinkers and stuff, and most of them were Jewish. And then they realized if you can divide and conquer a house, it'd be a lot easier to conquer this country. And so they always attribute Hitler saying this thing is, if first go the women, so go the men. In other words, men seem to be subjugated to their wives all the time. I see it all the time. I don't understand why people do that. Like, well, let me go home and talk to the missus about this before I make a decision. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Are you serious? What, you're afraid I have to go sleep on the couch? I would be like, man, I would tell my wife, you don't tell me to do shit. You sleep on the couch, bitch. This is my house. I mean, I don't understand how men are so subservient to their wives. It's like they have to go ask mommy if they can go out and play. I mean, I've seen that a lot. Or, you know, it's kind of like Sam Kinison, the comedian, was joking about Jesus, and he goes up and says, well, you can tell he'd never been married before. I mean, who just takes off, comes home after 3 days? Oh, where you been? Oh, honey, I was dead. Where have you been? Well, you've been out there, those 12 losers won't get a job. You know, always have to bring them home and have to feed them. You know, I mean, he had an interesting point from a comedic point of view. But the point is the fact that a lot of men become subservient to their wives, and it shouldn't be that way. It should either you have mutual respect for each other, or at least have a patriotic paterfamilias where the man is the head of the house and he makes most of the chief decisions, and the wife at least can feed back or at least support it. And we're trying to get away from that because they're really trying to push that men, that any type of masculinity is toxic. And when they see a true alpha male, they think he's absolutely evil. I mean, even in movies and stuff, anytime you ever see Aryan men are portrayed as villains, and or even, you know, the Fabio looking type with the lantern jaws and stuff like that. Oh no, those are always depicted as bad guys, especially in the new Star Wars followers, which are terrible. Which I think two of them are done by J.J. Abrams, who's a Jew, by the way. He purposely cast all the New Order as white guys, so they would be considered evil. So, again, it's another situation, just like Lethal Weapon 2, Richard Donner, making all this out there look like. They are not. Stuff in the German prison camps, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but they don't tell you is the reason by the time they got there why they looked that bad is supply trains have been bombed out. The roads are damaged. They couldn't hardly get any supplies to these prisons at all. They use them as labor because, like, why waste all that labor? You know what I'm saying? We're going to kill all these people? Not to mention there's a very powerful documentary out there called The Greatest Lie Ever Told, and it says mathematically in the time period when the final solution was supposedly presented by Himmler, until the end of the war, there was no way that you could have killed that many people in those facilities with the type of stuff you have. Even the crematoria that they had, you could barely fit two or three bodies in there, and it would take several hours to burn those bodies down to ash because of the bodies composed of so much water. And if you pile bodies on top of each other, that takes longer. Even the modern-day crematoria can't cremate bodies that fast, and they're much more higher. They're bigger, and they could do flash heat really fucking quick. Where those are kind of like old coal fire ones. There's no way they could get that freaking hot. So if you kill these people Auschwitz, how in the hell you get the most little rinky ass fucking A-frame elevator up to the fucking crematorium level and then hurt their bodies in there? They just mathematically wouldn't work. If you had all these people in that room as sardine cans and turn on the gas and kill them, what are you going to do with all these bodies? So it just doesn't work, man. It doesn't. And every so many years, they change the plaques because the new information comes to light that they have to address that, oh, there wasn't 2 million Jews that was killed in Auschwitz. There was only 650,000. Oh, no, now they're going to change again. Now there's only 322,000. Or now there's only 65,000. So, I mean, it's bullshit. And more people are starting to see that. And, of course, the Jews use that as their bludgeoning tool to always go, oh, you support another Holocaust because you disagree with us. No, I disagree with your shit because I think what you propose is bullshit. It's like Herod Ziegler, when he started speaking out, you know, again, this guy grew up in East Germany, Jan. When he started hearing Obama campaign, he says, oh, my God, this guy's preaching the very same thing I escaped from. And a lot of conservative commentators said, dude, by Reagan standards, this guy's a flaming red. And it's like, holy shit. And people are too dumb enough to see it.
I followed the whole Obama thing, and I saw straight away Obama's a commie. And if you go and you dig a little bit more, you'll see that Obama's mentor was that Jew who wrote that book on radicalism, Rules for Radicals. That's written by a Jew. The Jews are creating the conditions for communist revolution in your country under your nose. And they did the same thing in South Africa. They did the same thing in South Africa. Nelson Mandela. I've told people that, you know, as I dug into the history of Nelson Mandela, I did a few videos about this. I didn't realize the links of Nelson Mandela to Jewry, that Nelson Mandela actually was very close to Jews. They don't tell you this. Do you know that Nelson Mandela, when he became a lawyer, he worked for a Jew, and his boss was a Jew called Sadelsky. So Sadelsky was his boss. So listen to this. So Mandela became a lawyer at a time when very few blacks were lawyers in South Africa because it was apartheid time. So there are all these Jews busy working on the blacks, basically on a smaller scale than what they're doing in your country. They were already trying to, quotes, uplift the blacks, but they're actually preparing the blacks as a future army who will fight the whites. Now, one of the things that mystifies whites in South Africa, one of the things that mystifies people here a lot, is nobody can understand how come it is that Nelson Mandela is viewed as a god, literally as a god worldwide? Well, the real answer is Jews, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it turns out that when I dug into the history of Nelson Mandela, so not only was his boss Jewish, but Nelson Mandela and his wife, Winnie Mandela. Do you know that Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela were like house friends with, quote, white Jews, because Jews were classified as white. So here are blacks, and their house friends are Jews. Okay, that was not a normal thing in apartheid. Do you know that Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela were married in the house of Jews? The Jew's surname were Hamel. Now, Hamel was the editor of the South African, he was the editor of a thing called a journal called the African Communist. So there's this Jew, Hamel, and he's quotes, white Jew, and he's the editor of the African Communist. The African Communist was a journal for communism and how to spread communism in Africa, edited here by a Jew living here in Johannesburg. And I've got the wedding photos of the Mandelas, and so forth. The Jew's wife made the wedding dress for Winnie Mandela. So when you start looking at Nelson Mandela, here's this black guy who becomes a lawyer, and then this black guy becomes a communist and a terrorist, and he wants to kill whites. And all the people around him are Jews. And
Yeah.
everything he's linked to on a personal level are Jews. And it gets even worse. Later on, Nelson Mandela is caught. He's put in jail twice, I think. First time he's put in jail for some kind of violation of the law, but then Mandela and a stack of Jews are caught and they are put on trial in the Rivonia trial. Now
Okay.
the Rivonia trial is huge. I actually dug into it. I have an audiobook that's incomplete, but when I put that audiobook out, it'll blow people's minds. Because in there, you see all these blacks, black communist terrorists, okay? Nelson Mandela's the leader of them, but there are others, and there's even an Indian communist there. But all the quotes, white people, all the white people associated with Nelson Mandela are Jews, the whole lot of them. And so what actually happens is they are gathering together, they got property, and Jews are facilitating everything. The whole thing of the Rivonia trial and how Mandela was caught is actually a fascinating example of how let's call it good Jews, good honest Jews in your society, go about actually preparing to overthrow and destroy the very country that they live in and the very people that they are a part of. You know, because here they are, the Jews have got all the benefits of apartheid like all other whites. Okay? So Jews get treated like whites and they get all the benefits of the apartheid system, right? And you'd think that they'd be happy with that, hey? They can make money, they can do anything they want, etc. You'd think that that would be good enough for them. No, these Jews see that the whites are racial, and they see that apartheid has got too many racial things in it, and also apartheid is somewhat like the little baby brother of Nazism. And so you see all these Jews. The moment that apartheid comes into being, because it's voted for, and the Afrikaners are the ones voting for it, basically the Boers, so they are the main driving force behind this. Okay, and these Jews now go and they start creating a multiracial alliance. They get coloreds, they get Indians, they get blacks. The Jews basically grab all the other races and start bringing them together to overthrow the whites. The Jews are the leaders. And if you look into Rivonia trial, the Jews and the blacks and so forth, they've got various protests and things that go down. But then there comes a point where they start to fight. And what the Rivonia trial is about is that there are some bombings that have been done. But now what the Jews and the blacks are doing is they want to now start a revolution. They want to start a black revolution to slaughter the whites en masse. That's actually what the Rivonia trial is about. And so what happens is as they are organizing and doing this, and by the way, they're doing all of these things are taking place on properties and houses that are owned by Jews. So Jews go and buy this property, and Jews go and buy that property, and they bring the blacks in, and they bring all their security stuff, and they even start setting up like their own radio networks, etc. Jews are behind all of this, okay? Jews are the movers and shakers behind this thing. So as this thing gets wilder and there's this terrorism, the South African police and the South African army start trying to find out who is behind this. And that in and of itself is a very fascinating story. And eventually, they even start picking up the radio signals and they start getting in closer and closer. And then they realize that, you know what, the main action is coming from a suburb. It's a suburb in the north of Johannesburg called Rivonia. And it's quite a wealthy suburb. It's where the wealthy live, okay? Not the very mm-hmm. wealthy, but it's a big upper-class suburb. And they realize, you know what, all this stuff is coming from Rivonia. And then they start this whole business of monitoring it and spying on it. And they want to nab all these people. They want to arrest the whole lot of them. And most of the cops and things are, well, all the cops are white and most of them are Afrikaans cops. Anyway, they come down on them and they come in and they grab the whole lot in one shot. And when they arrest them, it's freaking just Jews and blacks, eh? It's Jews and blacks and they've caught the whole freaking lot of them. So now these Jews and blacks are going to go on trial for high treason. High treason. Mm-hmm. Now in South Africa the punishment for high treason back then was hanging, execution. So if the Jews and the blacks lose this trial, they're gonna be executed. And there's a bunch of them, okay? And yeah. You know, you should see how this whole thing works out. It turns out that the state prosecutor for the government is himself a Jew. So now the bad Jews and the blacks, they're hoping that the good Jews are going to help them. And I do think that in subtle ways that he did help them. And anyway, the next thing you know is the Jews must have been using their networks. And so this stuff is internal matters that affect South Africa. It is high treason against the government of South Africa. Next thing you know is you've got diplomats from Western countries. Diplomats from Western countries attending the trial, but it's got nothing to do with them. This is an internal South African thing. So now that the Western countries start putting pressure on South Africa, you know, about this trial. Anyway, and the other thing I must tell you is, and this will come out in the book. You won't believe the things the Jews were thinking up. The Jews were preparing to unleash thousands of terrorists. The Jews were getting the blacks to steal all kinds of explosives. They were going to manufacture lots of landmines and things and bombs to put in South Africa. They wanted to do violence against the whites of South Africa like you cannot believe. And these Jews were hoping that if they can get these blacks stirred up, that the blacks would come and kill all the whites, okay? And, yeah. And then over and above this, you must see how some of these Jews escaped from prison. Oh, man, you won't believe how cunning these Jews are, the modus operandi of these Jews, as they managed to get some Jews to actually escape out of prison and even get out of South Africa. It's a story that reads like a freaking James Bond, and you get to see what these Jews are up to. But even so, there were still some Jews that were in custody, and I mean, the Jews that were working against the whites, among them were engineers, lawyers, you know, people that you'd think in society they are happy with their position in society, that they got good careers, they got good jobs. And these freaking Jews go to help the blacks to freaking plan to overthrow the whites. But anyway, so the trial goes down, and eventually they don't give death sentences, so that's a bummer. But when I look at what happened with South Africa, the Jews were getting foreign governments to put pressure on South Africa so that they don't hang these people. Because Nelson Mandela should have been executed. And there's a lot of Jews in there that should have all been executed. Do you know one of them? Do you know that one of them even ran off to Israel? One of the Jews escaped and went straight to Israel. So when you look at Mandela, so now Mandela's in jail, okay? But everything about Mandela ties back to Jewry. So now that Mandela, and by the way, the Jews go and they team up with the Soviet Union. They start getting Soviet Union support for the blacks, start getting weapons and training for the blacks. They start, the Jews organize everything. The Jews organize for blacks to go to the Soviet Union, get training, the whole thing, everything funded and sorted out by Jews. And they start getting the race war going. So now Nelson Mandela's in jail. And the war starts getting going. Plus they're unleashing all the wars against Rhodesia, the Portuguese, etc. So now what happens is in the intervening years, because Mandela spends more than 20 years, something like 27 years or so in jail. So in that time, the blacks have to be commanded, and they get another commander, and the guy who runs the organization is a guy called Oliver Tambo. So Oliver Tambo runs the ANC during all the time that Mandela is in jail. So you would think that when the time comes when South Africa is going down and Mandela is let out of jail, you would imagine that Oliver Tambo, who's actually done all the heavy work for decades, that Oliver Tambo is actually going to become the president of South Africa. But you know what? The moment Mandela's out of jail, suddenly Oliver Tambo is shoved to one side and Mandela's number one again. And I'm telling you,
just like the mafia, exactly how the mafia does it. Once the boss gets out, he takes right back over.
Jewry organized it. And I must tell you, I found books written by Jews. There's tons of stuff I found about Jews and Nelson Mandela. Jews and Nelson Mandela, like you can't believe. So you know, going back to the question of why is it that Nelson Mandela is the wonderful poster boy, the god that came out of South Africa,
the grandfatherly civil rights leaders are portrayed here in the West. Yes.
It's Jews. It's that black had the most links to Jews of any other black, and not to mention.
He was dead for 6 months before they had to stop doing a Weekend at Bernie's with his ass because of the fact that obviously his corpse was starting to rot. So because people didn't know if he was still alive, but he'd been dead for probably 6 months.
That kept them on ice. I've heard of that story, but I'm not sure I trust that story. But yeah.
Well, they made you believe he was still alive. He just was probably sick somewhere dealing with it. On a bed, but I mean, but the way they portrayed it was he was still around that whole time, but there were rumors going around that he had been dead for all those 6 months.
I am aware of those rumors, and that itself could have been some kind of propaganda against the whites. In actual fact, do you know that Nelson Mandela in much of his time in quotes jail, he actually lived in a house and he was fine. That guy didn't do much hard labor. Maybe he did a bit of hard labor in the beginning, but he actually lived in a house. He was well looked after. No,
the reason I say that is because look at the way they portrayed Osama bin Laden. That there was a lot of evidence to show he was already suffering from dialysis from his kidneys and stuff during Clinton's time, and so not to mention. The CIA admitted that they make fake bin Laden videos because when people would analyze videos that come out, they said something about this guy doesn't make sense. they were looking at the fact that even certain parts of his beard weren't graying as much as they should be, or the patterns weren't growing right. And so they said, we think it was a fabrication. Now we know they can use AI and all sorts of stuff to make fake videos. I mean, you get on Facebook now, Jan, you see all this shit where it's like, oh, you could put, especially if you're a female, they'll put your face on Dorothy from Wizard of Oz and have you go and talk to the Scarecrow. I saw one the other day where they did a parody one, and they had AOC as Dorothy, and they had Joe Biden as the Scarecrow. I mean, but it looked pretty damn real. But I mean, the technology they have now, they can fake pictures, and now they can also fake voices. So, and of course, they also have the technology that, let's say, if they wanted to take out Alex Jones, you know, they want to take me out online, it would be that hard to do because I don't have that much material, you know, whereas they could find my voice and take it out. For someone like Alex Jones, not only did he have decades of material that had been recorded through his own stuff, but it has been repeated through other channels for so many years, it would take a while to wipe out all that stuff. But the fact that we're starting to get, you know, and they're pushing the AI so hard that we may end up with a Skynet situation, where all of a sudden the AI gets smart one day and say, realizes that all the guys on the other side aren't the threat, humans are. And then all of a sudden just taps in all the damn computer systems and then initiates the nuclear holocaust, just like in the Terminator. I mean, that is not too far-fetched.
Yeah, very interesting. There's a lot of advanced technology around. But yeah, maybe I just want to – maybe I should just explain a little bit about black presidents and Jews, because you and I were talking about Ramaphosa before the show.
Interesting, because I've seen this cat and how he come out and stuff, and it's like I hear from other people and they say, God, that guy is so damn corrupt. And not to mention when he come out like for the COVID thing, it's like, oh, what? You got to lock everybody down again? Come on. Who's really benefiting from this shit? Because everybody knew COVID was a hoax.
Well, let me tell you about these blacks. So Mandela was a Jew approved, very close ally of the Jews. Then the guy who came after Mandela was a guy called Mbeki, and the jury loved him. They loved him. He was talking the right way, that you need to lie and talk for the Jews. But then what happened was the blacks among themselves then began to have some internal squabbles in the ruling party, the ANC. And it was an internal communist fight, which I'm not going to go into the details of. But basically it started out as a fight. And what Mbeki was trying to do was, there was another black guy called Zuma, who's a Zulu. And Zuma and Mbeki basically tried to quietly kick Zuma out, but the problem was that when the president, so Zuma was his vice president, then they came up with a bunch of stories about how corrupt he was, and then they kicked him out. But then the blacks, because you've got to understand, the blacks themselves are commies. And they bought into the stuff that came from the Soviet Union and China. So then the blacks looked at the situation and they said, but hold on, you know, as a communist, Zuma's a good communist, and he actually didn't do this. And, you know, he's actually a good guy for our cause. So a very weird thing took place in that the ANC has got a special weird rule that is the same as they used to have in Eastern European communist parties. And the rule is that the president in South Africa, we don't vote for the president. We only vote for the political party. So what happens is the political party can choose the president. So what happened was when Mbeki fired Zuma, then the communists, including the Communist Party, including the trade unions, they started rallying around Zuma. And at the next ANC, the ANC has got like an annual meeting. At the next ANC annual meeting, they had it out among themselves, and they decided to kick Mbeki out. So the president fires the vice president, but the truth is that the black political party at its annual convention can vote, and they can kick out the president. So they kicked out Mbeki, and they took Zuma and made him the president. So that whole event was something that was nothing anybody expected. I was probably the only person on the internet writing about this Zuma thing and saying to people, you know, I think this Zuma might actually beat Mbeki. Well, let me tell you, it caught the liberals and the white liberals and the Jews off guard completely. So the next thing they know is Zuma's in there. But there's another secret to Zuma. Zuma doesn't need financing from Jews. Zuma's worked out a deal with Indians, the Guptas. So this new guy is not only a commie, but he's got his own funding from Indians, billionaire Indians in South Africa. So he doesn't need all this Jewish stuff. And now, Zuma came to power in 2009. From the moment that he came to power, they went crazy. The liberals and Jews went crazy about Zuma and how bad he is and how evil he is. And they carried on and on and on. And they were just constantly trying to catch out Zuma. And it went on like that for a whole bunch of years until about 2018 or so. Because it took them quite a long time.
Yeah, same shit they pulled on Trump.
I'm telling you, it went on and on and on. And then the next thing you know is a guy called Ramaphosa. I was aware of Ramaphosa. Then a guy called Ramaphosa. Next thing, Ramaphosa is president. I just about fell on my back. So Ramaphosa is interesting. He was also a commie, but he was a communist who was in the trade unions. And then Ramaphosa, although he's very popular, although he's very popular with the blacks, second only to Mandela, he ends up going into business. And the next thing is, he goes into business and boom, he's a billionaire. Okay? So he's this guy's not rich. He's just like all the others. And in no time at all, he's suddenly a billionaire. And he's now super rich. Him and his brother, they're billionaires. They own all kinds of things. Plus, there's a whole bunch of corruption there. There's tons of corruption around the Ramaphosa brothers, but you never see it, okay? You never see it. The Jews and the liberals never talk about Ramaphosa's corruption, okay? But now let me tell you the story about Ramaphosa and the Jews. In the days before I woke up to the Jewish issue, when I had Jewish friends, one of my best friends was a Jew, and he'd come, he'd visit me here in my house, and we'd talk and so forth. One day, my Jewish friend is in my house, and we're busy drinking tea or coffee in the afternoon, and he says to me, "Jan, a very important black man has just converted to Judaism." He says this to me around about the year 2010 or so. I say to him, a very important black man has converted to Judaism. Well, you know, who is he? So my Jewish friend said, "No, sorry, I can't tell you." So that was strange for me. I said to him, but you can tell me. I'm not going to print this anywhere. I'm not going to say anything to anyone. You can share stuff with me. If it's confidential, I'll keep it confidential. No, says my Jewish friend. Then sometime
later, said too much already.
Yes, he's already said too much. But sometime later, we are busy having a telephone conversation, and he actually reiterates this. He says, "A very important," and this was his words, "a very important black man has converted to Judaism." So the Jews are very happy. Now, anybody can convert to Judaism, but it's not like Christianity. You know, if you want to become a Christian, you just have to accept Jesus, okay? Nobody can stop you from becoming a Christian if you want to be a Christian. Well, in the case of Jews, you can't become a Jew without going through a whole bunch of tests, okay? You've got to do a whole bunch of stuff. and you've got to deal with rabbis, and you've got to do tests, and they have to approve you. There's a whole bunch of stuff. If you manage to go through all this stuff, it takes at least about 5 years. Okay, there's a whole process to convert to Judaism, and it's by no means a certainty that you can become Jewish if you're interested. So, because they are checking you, man. Okay.
So
here's a black man who became a Jew. So I thought to myself. So who could this black man be? And later on, when I woke up to the Jewish issue and I kicked my Jewish friend out, at times I would sit and think to myself, so who is this black guy? And then the guy I thought about was maybe it's the guy who heads the Reserve Bank, you know, which is like our Fed. So I thought, okay, maybe it's that guy. But as the years went by, I just couldn't figure it out. And then when Ramaphosa became the president of South Africa, I saw something I'd never seen before. When he became the president, suddenly I saw white, let's call it white Jewish rabbi anointing him, blessing him. And it's the first time ever that a South African president of any race has ever been blessed by a Jew rabbi. And I was, what? What the hell is a Jewish rabbi blessing the president of South Africa? Then I started doing some digging. And that's when I saw a whole bunch of stuff. I started doing digging and research. And then I discovered photographs and photographs and photographs of Ramaphosa with Jews. But here's the kicker. He'd go to events with Jews. This is before he was even president. He'd go to Jewish events. He'd be having dinners with Jews and everything. And he's the only black man in the room. The only black guy among these Jews. And I said to myself, that must be the guy who converted to Judaism. Do you know, I've even put online a speech that Ramaphosa delivered in a synagogue in Cape Town. He gave a speech to Jews, and he even tells all kinds of personal stories that show how close he is to Jews. He talks about how he's best friends with the chief rabbi of South Africa. The chief rabbi of South Africa. The two of them are close together. In fact, the chief rabbi of South Africa boasts at how close he is to Ramaphosa. And how they text each other and they visit each other's houses. And then they start telling stories. And Ramaphosa talks about, oh, one day the chief rabbi came to me in my office as the president of South Africa, and he brings the Talmud. And he brings the Talmud, and there we are reading the Talmud in the office of the president of South Africa. And the rabbi promised, and the chief rabbi promised to give me a Talmud, and I'm waiting for my copy of the Talmud. All of that on video. I've got the videos. I've put it out. If you want to see them, you can ask for the links and I'll send it to you. And I looked at this black guy, and he's always with the Jews. And he's the only black guy who's hobnobbing with all the rich Jews. Plus, you see him getting privileges that nobody else gets. Nobody's ever had it. Like, for example, the Financial Times in London allows Ramaphosa to write columns whenever he wants to. The Financial Times of London, the Financial Times of Britain, has never allowed any president of South Africa to write articles on their thing. Ramaphosa gets it. The other thing you can see is how all the Jewish-owned newspapers and media, how they fawn over Ramaphosa. They even have a term for it. They call it Ramaphoria. And they stoked up everybody into believing, oh, Ramaphosa, he's going to fix everything. And everything that Ramaphosa does, you'll see all the quotes, white Jews and all the wealthy they like back him. Yes, he's a great president, even though he's a big failure, a total crook. He's even a flop, even by black standards. But you see all these Jews, all these quotes, white Jews, and they're just fawning over this guy like crazy.
In other words, he's signing all the checks as they're fucking having him write up.
And so I reckon that Ramaphosa is the man. That Ramaphosa must be the black who converted to Judaism. That's my conclusion. There's no other black that I see as a possible candidate.
Hey man, where there's smoke, there's fire, and that's obviously flaming inferno right there. Okay, so yeah, let's kind of change topics a little bit. You know, some of the interesting current events right now. You got like the whole Trump versus Biden situation. We see a lot of interesting stuff there. And obviously the election was clearly stolen because in accordance with the globalists with Agenda 21, they've moved everything up to Agenda 2030. And if you look at a lot of the main planks, which is essentially world communism, one of the things they wanted to do is to eliminate the consumption of meat. And we're starting to see that tremendously. Matter of fact, not too long ago, we started seeing that a lot more people were trying to get more beef from Brazilian cows as opposed to American ones. But then all of a sudden, not too long after that, they started having a serious outbreak of mad cow syndrome that was going on. So when Trump got in, he really tried to push the beef industry more. And he had set up a deal where not only that, but the USMCA, where they were trying to help push more beef sales to Canada, for example. And so Trump had pushed that. Now under Biden, we're starting to see that he's trying to scale a lot of that back. So that's why with the inflation and everything, meat's come a lot more expensive. Even going out to the store, getting a halfway decent pork chop around you about $30. And so little things like that is just starting to kick up. And of course, this is all part of another plan because they're really working on CBDCs. And what they're trying to do is because I had seen a documentary a few years back called IOUSA, and they talked about that time. It came out in 2008, I do believe, right before the crash, where they're basically stating that the value of the U.S. dollar since the Federal Reserve had taken control of the currency had gone down 96 cents of its value since 1913. So basically at that particular point, 4 cents of the dollar was its true value. And of course, the only reason why it didn't collapse years before is because it became the world reserve currency after World War II. And plus, we were of all the allied countries, we were the only ones that didn't have any real infrastructure damage. The only damage we had was Pearl Harbor, and that was fixed pretty quick. But with the stagflation of the 70s, plus, you know, taking us off the gold standard, all that stuff, Reagan tried to use Reaganomics to try to bring a trickle-down economy and things of that nature, things were slowly kind of picking up. And, of course, Clinton started pushing more money into social programs because he was cutting down military. But then all of a sudden we started that 9/11 happened, and a lot of things had changed. Not matter of that, but the forcing of direct payroll into your bank accounts, that they're trying to eliminate people getting payroll checks, things of that nature. So a lot of that stuff was all being implemented, and we're starting to see it incrementally. What was going on here is the complete financial takeover of the entire financial system in all the West. Now you've got like Silicon Valley Bank had collapsed, and some of us due to their woke bullshit and their practices. But basically, they were cooking the books for so long, and it just didn't work anymore. Then you see two other banks start to collapse. And now supposedly they've propped those up, so it's not as big of a deal. But then you got Deutsche Bank looked like it was getting ready to collapse, many others. So, I mean, we could very well see by the summer, Jan, you could see a 2008 scenario. And a lot of the tea leaves I've been reading has basically been saying is the beginning of that collapse is the real estate collapse. Which, because of COVID, a lot of companies have realized they don't need all this office space anymore. Between their green policies of, like we mentioned before, like having people stay home one day a week or what have you, plus the fact that their carbon footprint, and again, I'm using a lot of their terminology that they use, the carbon footprint of these businesses to try to have lower scores and things of that nature. To try to set things up so people are not driving back and forth and using mass transportation. And, of course, the whole COVID lockdown was to get people acclimated to being stuck in their homes, which is not much different than what they do in China living in these little tiny ass almost cell blocks in these apartment complexes because you don't see houses there. So you're starting to see a lot of stuff that they've been pushing over in China is now coming in over here because Hollywood has been basically going broke for a good 20 plus years. And now you're starting to see the Chinese are propping up all these Hollywood studios to the point where they're attacking Americanism and exceptionalism. So, for example, like The Martian with Matt Damon, you know, basically the whole thing is that whole situation goes bad. He crash lands on Mars, manages to survive and still make it. But guess what? Sorry, United States doesn't have the resources anymore to make another ship and hurt. Come on, get your ass. Not that, but why would we waste our time getting one dude, right? I mean, you can try, but what's the big deal? Where China already has a space program in place. Hey, guess what? We can send a ship already out there. I mean, we saw that with the movie 2010 from 1984, the second Arthur C. Clarke, you know, based film on the books, where basically when they went to go out to Discovery after it had been lost after 2001, that the Soviets already had a ship built and ready to go, and it would take us several more years to get one built, the Discovery 2 that they're already working on, but it was still 2 years out, and the orbit of the Discovery 1 was starting to deteriorate. So basically, they already had a ship in place to go out there. So basically, they try to work it out where the Americans could just kind of tag along with the Soviets to go out there and figure out what the hell is going on in Jupiter, right? But again, you're starting to see over and over again that America's not up to snuff anymore, that we don't have the stuff we had. Like, even Obama is trying to insinuate that the Star Wars program didn't exist at all. That it was all a fabrication. That was a bluff. And that, or if he did, he shut it down.
Are you serious?
If it wasn't even real, he said it was basically a completely fake, or he found ways to shut it down. So, again, this is a bunch of shit that's starting to go on. And when you start connecting the dots, again, you see the mosaic. And as you pull away the mosaic is the merchant meme clasping the hands because it's the same MFs that are behind it all. So, again, you look how what Trump got screwed out of the election. They put Biden in. What's the first thing he did? He signed 28 executive orders reversing a majority of the shit Trump had already done, including building the wall, stopping the pipeline, and stop for us being energy independent. And then what happens? We quickly start going out. Then to top it off, he starts tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that Trump had built back up after decades of misuse, okay? He's depleting that. And then to top it off, he's selling it not only to Europe, but to the Chi-Coms, which is treason. And now they're saying, oh, what if we actually go into a hot war with China? Well, guess what? They say because of all the munitions we've been sending to the Ukraine, which, again, there are no news services that's showing anything that's going on over there. There's no drone footage of any combat situations, either from Ukraine and its allies nor Russia. It's like, is there even a war going on over there? And then they have a guy who took pictures of these places like Kiev and these other cities that have been damaged by Russian attacks. And then he goes to the actual towns, to the buildings, and says, look, there's nothing wrong here. He shows the exact picture where it was taken, and you see all the battle damage. And then he lowers the photograph, and there's not a damn thing wrong. It's pristine. It's all photoshopped. And it's like, not to mention Pelosi, Romney, Biden, even McConnell, all their kids have ties to business things over in Ukraine, and they're making a shitload of money. This is the biggest money laundering scam you have ever seen in history. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck? But again, what's the purpose of it? Now they're blowing up food processing plants here in the United States left to right. They're destroying chicken plants. They're destroying places where eggs are made. So now we got an egg shortage. Why is that? Oh, guess what? Bill Gates has got a synthetic egg he's been putting money in for all these decades. It's ready to launch. And so, again, you start seeing all this shit. And the most amazing thing, when you talk about whites are starting to really start to understand what's going on, I see the memes. You know, the guy that founded the Cash App application, okay? He was brutally stabbed to death in San Francisco about a week or so ago, right as the Federal Reserve is coming out with their own version of a Cash App. So, again, like I said, You put, and I saw a meme already had that together. So, I mean, someone's spending their time in their cubicle putting this shit out. And it's not false information. So you're sitting there starting to go, dude, there's obviously something afoot. They're trying to hurry up and advance something before 2030, which is either leading to a third world war. And another problem they said is if we couldn't handle the Chi-coms right now because we're sending a lot of our munitions over there, we're losing soldiers because of the fact that a lot of them have been either been dishonorably discharged for not taking the vax. Their religious rights have been ignored, so they're also being discharged for that. As well as the recruitment has gone down dramatically because of the forced vaccination of our soldiers. So we've got a serious military problem. So everything Trump built up in the 4 years he's in office has already been depleted.
Well, if I may add a few things, when you talk about NEAT, the one thing that I've looked at many times is it seems to me as if there is a war against white farmers worldwide, including in America. So I wonder if that meat stuff and all those bogus excuses for that, whether it's not really about so much about meat as destroying the white farmers who are the meat industry.
Well, look what FDR did during the Depression, where they would pay farmers not to plant. It was all control, price controls. That's part of it.
Interesting.
I think that was a beta test.
And something else that I came across yesterday that just astounded me. Susan Rice, the last time I heard her name was in the time of the Clintons and those sorts, maybe Obama as well. Susan Rice comes out and she says that racism is costing America $16 trillion. The problem is that you guys are too racist and you should be letting the blacks in on everything. That's it in a nutshell. And it comes from some study from Citibank. I just my jaw just drops in total disbelief. At
Well,
the
I tell you
bullshit
what
they're
else,
talking about.
I tell you what else is pushing here. They're now saying that any type of traffic citation on blacks is racist now, because really that's another reason why, if you want to have a legitimate argument for quote unquote defunding the police, is because we've turned the police forces into armed meter maids because of the fact that many cities have so much shortfall because they overspend their budgets that the only way they can get stuff is by hitting people over the head with traffic citations. And I've often brought up and said, how is that even constitutional? Because of the fact that, to basically consider cruel and unjust punishment, when you give someone a minor traffic citation for like running through a stop sign and it costs you over $170, many people here are on minimum wage and trying to pay a $170 fine in maybe within 2 weeks is absolutely is financially impossible. And then if you can't pay it, like I actually sat in a courtroom once years ago, and they were doing all the traffic cases before they got to the other ones. So they're going through an enumerated agenda. So as I'm sitting there waiting all this time, then they get to the traffic citations, and I've noticed two things. And this is a Democrat judge sitting on the bench. He goes up and goes, "Oh, well, so this one girl got busted for shop." Lifting, but it's her second time, so she's definitely going to jail. Okay, but it was a white girl, but she was definitely going to jail. Then it comes to this traffic citations, and I saw this guy come in there, and of course he looks like a typical wigger, wearing sweatpants and leaning up on the podium like he's got no decorum whatsoever, right? He's like, "Oh, do you lean on your do you lean on your kitchen table like that when you dress your folks?" He's like, "Oh, dude, I don't want a home." He's like, "Yeah, that shows." And so basically, he's like, he basically gave this guy the full fine. He had 2 weeks to pay it, and he said, "But I'm not working right now." I was like, "Well, maybe in 2 weeks' time, you better come back and beg for mercy. Maybe we'll give you an extension." I mean, it was like,
Wow.
wow, holy shit. Then I
Wow.
see a white female come up who's somewhat professionally dressed, like she probably works in an office or something. And she had a pretty decent charge. I mean, it was like running a red light or something. Okay. It wasn't just a rolling stop. Okay. It was running a red light, whatever the case may be. She got half the fine and she got twice the amount of time to pay it. And I looked, sat there and looked at
What?
them. Yeah. I looked at the person I was sitting with. I go and I said, "Wow, did you just see that shit?" I said, "Is that sexism or what?" It's like, basically, it's like, They told this guy it wasn't working. Well, maybe you can beg for the courts for mercy. Maybe we'll give it to you and give you an extension. Where she was just like, well, I got to pay his fine. I was like, okay, fine. I'll tell you what. We'll give you 30 days to pay it, and I'm only going to charge you $75. Have a nice day.
Wow. Wow.
And so I was like, holy shit. And I'm like, are we going to have to go in front of this guy? Because that's not a good vibe, man. And so, I mean, just seriously, I see the biasness. And then later on, when he found out that his municipal court was going to be dissolved into the county courts now, because we're starting to see a lot of consolidations of stuff around here, he was furious because he felt that he was finally god of his own little pond. And when they said that your position was going to be eliminated, he was outraged. And not only that, but I've seen people, when they dared to file an appeal in his court, he made sure their staff dragged their knuckles until the time was almost up to the county court had to call back and say, hey, it's been 2 weeks since we requested information on this case. Why are you stonewalling? Oh, we just haven't gotten to it yet. It's like, how many cases do you have a day? Well, we have this many. You tell me you couldn't have got this done in 72 hours and it taking you 2 weeks? There's an agenda here. And so they actually called him out and said, if you do not submit this stuff by 3 o'clock tomorrow, we are calling the attorney general's office and having you investigated. Conveniently, within 1 hour, the shit showed up in their inbox.
Yeah, interesting.
But that's the type of shit. They're like, how dare this person file an appeal in my court? I mean, these guys really think they're gods. And I've seen books about that where they talk about these black robe gods and stuff, where they think they can rule over everything, especially these liberal judges, because they legislate from the bench. And that's not what the judiciary is supposed to be doing. Or they tell the jury, you will rule on the law as I have given it to you. In other words, I will tell you this because I'm going to get a prescribed response. You're not to deliberate amongst yourselves and say this man should be fucking free. No, you will get a guilty plea on this guy, is what he's saying. So we've seen it all the time in some of these documentaries where they really showcase how corrupt the courts are. And we see, especially during the Obama administration, they purposely put forth all these Marxist judges and stuff. And that's another reason why Trump had a hell of a time even getting his cases heard about the election fraud, because these are all Obama-era judges, even some Clinton ones, that refused to even hear the cases.
Wow. No, I've noticed that to Trump, they've been hammering him like crazy. And, you know, the whole issue, the election was stolen. There's no question about it. I was following the stuff. There's all kinds of indications. And then it even came out as to, you know, how the rigging occurred, etc. And nowadays they say, no, that's just a conspiracy theory. It's just, it didn't happen. Ah, bulldust,
well,
man.
Did you see the documentary 2000 Mules with Dinesh D'Souza?
No, I didn't.
Oh, definitely got to download that, brother. They showed it to exactly how they did it, how they caught people. There's one particular group. They were able to GPS track some of these guys. And they caught one guy who not only went to multiple ballot box locations, but even crossed state lines from North Carolina into Georgia. So they were able to track some of these guys through their own cell phones and see what they were doing. And of course, you know, with GPS now, they could get down to within 30 feet of where you're standing and know exactly where you're at. And they had the exact locations of the ballot boxes that said, it's only safe to assume that if this guy is right here and he was right there and now he's this place, that he's hitting all the ballot boxes, because that's the only thing that's in that vicinity of where he's standing. And then they had a couple of people come forth and testify that, yes, they were mules, that they actually visited 5, 6, even 20 different ballot box locations stuffing the ballots.
Wow,
I told my mom, Mom, look, specifically, when you go to your polling station, request paper ballot, because in the state of Ohio, you have the right to do that. It may take a couple extra minutes, but you have to get your paper ballot, which is filling the ovals, and then they put it in a reader. Now, what I always do is when I go to do it, I always take a picture of my ballot front and back. and I always keep a picture of it on me. So that way, if I ever want to question, I have the serial number of the ballot right there at the bottom. And I go up and say, I'd like to see my ballot to make sure that all my tallies are corrected. Because majority of the time, Jan, my ballot is nearly empty. And the reason why is because a lot of these guys are the only candidates running, and it's usually a Republican majority district. Half these guys either I don't trust, I will not vote for, or I know nothing about. Because I haven't vetted them, okay? Where I'll vote, I'll know who I voted for certain offices, but I've gotten so disillusioned, disenfranchised of the vetting, of the voting system right now that I'm almost not even going to want to vote anymore. And which really pisses me off because I remember watching the 1980 presidential debates between Reagan and Carter, and I remember asking my mom, when can I vote? She said, when you turn 18. I said, well, I can't wait till I turn 18 then because I want to vote. So I've got to vote for the first time in 1992, and I voted for Ross Perot. Okay. My first two elections, I voted for Ross Perot.
I was a huge fan of Ross Perot. That was the first time that we had access to like American TV and CNN. I was a huge fan of Ross Perot.
I even went back and watched the 92 debates not too long ago and watched it again and realized, and I didn't know shit about politics back then. And I realized that, man, my instincts are right. I voted for Ross Perot both times. And then what was interesting is when I was starting to get a little more active, I actually looked up the political party he started. He started the Reform Party. And unfortunately, I got all the headquarters and left a message, but I never got a message back. But the last candidate that they ran on the Reform Party ticket and won was Jesse Ventura when he was running for governor of Minnesota. And he was outspent.
He was outspent
10-1, and he won in a good, not a landslide, but a damn good majority. And but that was the last candidate they ran was Jesse Ventura. And now he's a very social liberal, unfortunately. But generally speaking, though, I started looking for, that's when I started getting more of my political awakening, is trying to find something. But Ron Paul is why I even joined the GOP, because I thought we could try to take over the mechanizations from the inside. And the whole Iowa GOP was Ron Paul supporters, and they did take it over and ran it for several years.
Wow, that is very fascinating. Because Jesse Ventura is not a bad guy. I've seen that his JFK stuff that he put out was very good. He put out a lot of good stuff about the JFK assassination, asks questions, and yeah, you know, it's fascinating about Ross Perot because at the time I hated Clinton and I thought Clinton was really bad. And did you notice that Ross Perot was also getting threats, and then he pulled out, and then he came back in, and then he lost
That's
momentum.
Because they went after his daughter. They went after his daughter. So he jumped out to deal with that bullshit. He jumped back in, but then it made him look like a flake. So that's why he only got, I think it was 16-20% of the vote, but it scared the establishment so much that they created the Presidential Election Commission, and that's why you only ever see a Republican and Democrat on the debates.
We've got
at least 7 or 8 legitimate political parties. For example, the Libertarian Party, which started in 1971, finally got all 50 state ballot access a few years ago. But yet you never see the Libertarian candidate on that stage. And that's where I would start telling my congressman, say, hey, look, we need to abolish this Presidential Election Commission because of the fact that it's totally unconstitutional because you're not giving us the options. We have legitimate presidential candidates from the Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, even the Green Party, which are commies. OK, but you're not letting us hear their viewpoints. Now, what RT America was doing was for several years, they would have alternate debates and they would have the other candidates debate each other. And it was awesome. And they wouldn't throw them softball questions. They'd ask some hardcore shit. But like I was explaining to someone here the other day, I said, if you ever watch American presidential debates, at some point they always ask them a stupid question like Coke or Pepsi. They always ask them that stupid question at some point because they'll be laughing and they'll just be like, oh, by the way, Coke or Pepsi. I said, it's got to be a fucking lead in for something else or saying that if you say, yeah, I prefer Coke or I like Pepsi, that means that you're going to have this particular backing group back you as opposed to the other group that's going to back you. So, I mean, I think those are co-words for something else. I would just say I prefer water myself.
My goodness, you know, and I thought I never imagined I would see election rigging in America. There are a bunch of things that I never imagined I'd see in my lifetime, and the rigging of a presidential election on the scale of Trump is something that I just couldn't even conceive. But very interesting, you know, because I remember them saying with Ross Perot, they actually said afterwards that. That if he had not pulled out, he would have won with like he'd have got like 68% of the vote or something, and that to me and you know, after Ross Perot, the next best hope for somebody coming outside the system was Trump, but I mean Ross Perot already showed me that things aren't right, and look at Trump, hey, that. They are hammering anybody who's not there. I mean, look at Biden. Biden's got brain damage. He's had like operations and stuff. He's the man has got actual illness and
yeah,
brain
he's got
damage.
Dementia. I mean, he even shits himself when he goes to see the Pope.
I'm telling you, and you know, I remember I did a video about Roosevelt. Roosevelt was a paraplegic. Now, Roosevelt was not, there's some requirement that the president of the United States must be medically fit for the office. Now, I mean, if Roosevelt went and hid the fact that he couldn't walk, but I mean, here's Biden, he's medically unfit, he can't even think. He forgets things within a few seconds. The man's got brain damage, and there are doctors who've even said that, you know, this guy shouldn't be the president, and yet there he is. Everybody just accepts it.
You know why they don't do it? They don't take him out or impeach him because of the fact that what did Nixon always say? He always said, make sure whoever you're running with is worse than you are. It increases your chances of survivability. That's why he picked Kamala Till Harris, because of the fact that she's dumber than he is. And she's so awkward, she can't even form sentences right. I mean, what do you expect from a mixed breed? But, I mean, the bottom line is she is totally incompetent. And she laughs at inappropriate moments. And, wow, I wouldn't doubt she's got a disease. But that being said, her husband is a Jew.
I was about to say that. I knew about her Jewish links. And you see, I mean, look at how America is going. You cannot tell me that the founding fathers of America or anybody even in America 100 years ago would have even believed any of this stuff is possible. Jews are totally stuffing up your electoral process,
as well as
your society.
The first president that was really completely controlled was Wilson. He was a college professor. He had no business being in there. He was completely controlled. Matter of fact, when after TR left office and he got Taft in, you know, Taft is all Mason and CFR and everything else. Okay, so but he did a terrible job, and he tried to run again because he thought Wilson was a joke, and so he tried to run again under the bully pulpit party. And he didn't hardly get any votes because by then his star had fallen. But, you know, he was one that pushed us to go into Cuba and everything else, as well as starting to show more of our military might with our Navy. And also he said that America is finally come of age and that we were going to show that we're a world power coming online on stage. And that was one of the benefits of Theodore Roosevelt. But again, he did a lot of cool stuff in office, like, preserving the parks and all that other shit. But the bottom line is, once he got out and put Taft in, who was a complete joke, but ended up becoming a Supreme Court justice, which is unheard of. So that set a precedent. That's why Obama was hoping that Biden might put him in as Supreme Court justice, because they did it with Taft. So, I mean, that's an issue. So to me, I don't think a president should ever be allowed to do anything after they leave office, because they could be too easily compromised. That's why they make sure they give them a still keep their payroll after they leave for a pension. So because like when Nixon saw what happened after he lost against Kennedy, and then he ran for governor of California in 62 and lost that. And then someone put an audit on his ass, and he saw the debilitating effects of having a tax audit on you. So that was his weapon of choice to go after his enemies, was putting IRS tax audits on him and shit, because they freeze all your assets. You can't even pay your remedial bills. It's not like bankruptcy where you can ask the court for money just to pay your basic bills. They freeze all your shit. It can be frozen for up to a year before you ever get anything released. And so that became one of his weapons of choice, and the Clintons are notorious for that too.
Wow, that is fascinating. You know, the bottom line is that your country is degenerating at a fast pace,
That's what that defector was saying. And again, that interview was recorded in 1985. And he was talking about, he said, I'm absolutely amazed at how quickly we're already going past the demoralizing stage into the next stage, because of the fact that I would never expect that America would have fallen that quickly and not that, but that willingly. He's like, that's more than we could have ever have hoped for. And well, not that, but what did Khrushchev say when he was premier of Soviet Union? He says, "We will hang the capitalists with the very rope that they sell it to us with."
Yeah, you know, Sonny, the only thing I'll say to you is that in terms of politics and all that kind of thing, just focus on educating whites, because I think the thing that I said to people on my website and to Americans after Trump was cheated, I said to people, well, you know, there you've got proof that even voting doesn't work in America anymore. And the only thing that's left after that is weapons and overthrow. Yes. And I think as white men get angrier and angrier, as long as one can just keep getting them to all think in the same way, I think that in the end, with you guys in America, I really think that this could be a whole worldwide thing. Us in South Africa as well. Ultimately, it's going to be grab weapons. In our case, it's going to be grab weapons and do secession. In your case, you guys are going to have to grab weapons and overthrow the thing. But in your case, you've got lots of weaponry and you've got tons of white men still around.
They've been pushing that for a while, because they've been like heavily arming a lot of the federal agencies. Even the post office has got large quantities of hollow point bullets. What the hell is a post office need with bullets, you know? But not that, but I think the January 6th situation was a steam valve to let the government know, you know, we're almost had it, man. Stole the election. We've almost had it. And then in Brazil, when they stole the election from Bolsonaro, you saw how they totally attacked the presidential palace. The people have had it, man. I think we're starting to see, but that's the whole point. I saw an interview I heard on Jay Dyer's show. He was talking to a KGB guy for the NKVD or whatever, and he said specifically, he's like, well, aren't we supposed to overthrow the capitalists? And he's like, no. No, we promote revolution for the sake of revolution. In other words, it must constantly change, but it's always us who pushes the change. In other words, you never let anything get complacent. You never let anything get settled. It's a constant revolution. And the guy was totally blown away by this. He's like, what the hell? That doesn't make any sense. He's like, it makes perfect sense. It's control out of chaos, but we control the chaos.
Well, let me tell you, whites can still win, and it doesn't matter how many weapons they give to the police and all the others. If they are driving whites out and whites are losing faith in the system, you've also got tons of whites who are veterans, tons of ex-military, tons of ex-police. The point is that as whites get sick and tired of things, it won't matter anymore who they give guns to, because the whites will just either quit. You'll even find police and military coming onto the side of the white masses. The thing I like about America is that you people in America, white Americans, you can talk to any white American, and all white Americans have a very fixed view of what America is, what America is, and how it should work. And you all know that you're being screwed over, and you can see who's screwing you over, etc. I don't think that you guys are going to have a problem one day getting to a point where you're going to overthrow your elite. Because at the end of the day, who's going to fight for the other side? Or transgenders and faggots, are they going to fight you? Blacks, Mexicans, they're going to fight you. You're going to clean their clocks, man. And even here in South Africa, I will keep in touch with you. There are things that I've done that when I finish it, I will send you the links. Let me tell you, even in South Africa, the whites are not finished. Even with all these blacks, the whites are not finished. And the path forward for us is secession. That's the real path. Secession will lead to all kinds of things. And again, the same thing here is just enough whites getting angry enough. The system collapses far enough. It's the same game. And
I know there's already some movements going on in your country because you've got that, was it Swaziland, that basically is its own country inside South Africa. Plus you got the Khoi that would actually have been trying to try to recognize their own nationhood. And even though they've been rejected by the UN, they're still fighting for it. And I've also heard the political party in Cape Town, which is generally majority white, or at least, white agenda, is trying to eventually maybe separate from South Africa as well, because they don't want to pay for all this shit. Not that, but especially during COVID, they started forcing all these blacks in there, especially from Africa itself, into Cape Town. So what they're trying to do is, again, the Kalergi plan, where they're going to bring all these outsiders in and just totally water down your shit. And then, of course, the cloud deployment strategy is to collapse all your welfare systems so they have to be completely nationalized. And we start to see that here with Illinois and California on the verge of bankruptcy. If those two states fail, then they become protectorates of the United States, which means they lose all their sovereignty as a state. And so that's where I've called for a 50-state secession, that we need to have all 50 states, it must be unanimous, that we basically render the District of Criminals superfluous, and that we hold military tribunals and go through every member of Congress, every member elected official or appointed, and find out what exactly they've been into. With technology these days, they will know everything that politician's done from the last time the phone call they took to the last time they wiped their ass. They will know everything that politician's done. And if they've not done anything questionable, they have a scale of things that are acceptable. I mean, even accepting junkets like, oh, we're going to give you tickets to a ball game, okay? That's accepting it's considered a bribe, okay? So that's another issue altogether, is the fact that there's a lot of people don't accept those things. Like Ron Paul, he never even participated in a lucrative retirement program in Congress, because he's like, no, that shouldn't be for us. And plus, as a doctor, he got his own medical care. So I mean, he didn't take any of that shit. Where a lot of these people in Congress, they get one term, they get paid that salary for life, and they can also get medical benefits as a former congressman for life. That's bullshit. Anytime you leave a job, man, you lose all benefits. That should be the same for Congress as well.
The whole corruption of your system and the anger that it's generating, just keep focusing on that anger and white men sticking together. Let me tell you, we whites, we as a civilization, we're far, far from finished. When I finished that special video about South Africa, I think then you will see things differently. Let me tell you, it doesn't matter if these people outnumber us. We can fight back. And in South Africa, as people get angrier and angrier, the only thing, when I look at history, the only historical thing that makes sense is revolution. And whether we even push it or not, it's going to happen. There's a quote from Napoleon. Napoleon said, you can't start a revolution and you can't stop a revolution. That thing's going to come, and when it comes, it's going to come. And look at like that guy who does the Dilbert cartoons, and how he turned around and he got so angry with the blacks. So there's yet another example of a guy who's calm, quiet. He's been doing his thing, and then he gets to the point where he can't take it anymore. And I'm telling you, Sonny, I'm seeing more and more examples of whites just not only can't take it anymore, but they also move off and do other things, and they look after their own stuff. And I want to tell you that if people go and like they run their own little business and they got their own little home, and you then want to come and screw with them, then they're going to be really, really angry, because it's their property, it's their business, it's their life. And let me tell you, here in South Africa, they've beaten us around and kicked us around so much. You know, there's over something like 117 statutes in Parliament that are against whites. And let me tell you, whites are getting more and more tired of having to pay taxes, pay for things, pay for electricity, pay for this, pay for that, and you're getting nothing. And the government still wants to screw you and wants to, you know, like with the electricity. Even as the electricity fails and it's getting worse, the blacks who run the electricity want to increase the prices, and they do.
Yes.
They want pay increases, price increases. You're talking like 15%, 18%. The only end for this, Sonny, is the time when people get, you know that Afrikaans term, gatvol, when they get sick and tired of this thing, and they say, you know what, I'm going to grab my gun. And when you get enough people feeling that way, let me tell you, that's when you're going to see whites rolling. You guys in America, you whites in America, there's so many of you. You've got so much firepower. Don't even worry if this takes a while, whether it takes 10 years or 15 years or whatever. Let me tell you, you can clean up America. You can own, you can reclaim every square inch of the United States, which belongs to you. Even the Canadians. When I've looked at the Canadians, and I went to Canada and I looked at the Canadians, I like the Canadians, and I thought that the Canadians are far from finished. And there you saw the Canadian truckers and the things they did. Let me tell you, whites are far from finished. The only thing that's needed is for whites, especially white males, to get to breaking point, where they say they can't take it anymore. I've got an American friend. He's in computers. I've known him for almost 20 years. He was already following me on my original African crisis. And he wrote to me a while back. He said to me, you know what, Jan? I earn a good salary. I'm a computer. I'm in computers. I earn a good salary. And you know what? I'm paying so much in freaking taxes. And he told me the amount of money he was paying in taxes. He was paying more in taxes than I earned as a computer programmer here in South Africa. And he says to me, I can barely afford a car. I'm driving an old car. He says, all my money is being sucked out of me. Why am I doing this? And, you know, as people get to that sort of mindset where they're saying, what the hell is going on? I can't take this anymore. I'm being screwed left, right, and center. The rich and the Jews and the people in Parliament are doing what the hell they want. Same thing in South Africa. These guys are making the laws. These blacks are making these laws and stuff, and they're putting in lockdowns and things. Then they say, oh, nobody's allowed to buy liquor. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, the government ministers are buying and selling liquor illegally and making tons of money out of it, while they've just passed a law to say that you can't buy liquor.
Exactly.
When all that,
the thing we've been seeing here too is that a lot of these Mexicans and stuff that come up here, they're all driving these brand new Jeeps or trucks and stuff. It's like I said, man, that's a pretty damn new full size truck. I'm like, that's got to cost at least $50,000-$60,000. I'm going, who the hell's giving the money for this shit? You know, or is the Muslims coming over? They're driving Mercedes and BMWs and stuff. I'm sitting there going, dude, something isn't right here, because I'm looking at a lot of guys here Like me, I drive older trucks. Some of it's because I prefer to drive older vehicles because I can still work on them, you know? Something breaks, I can fix the damn thing. All this other shit. I like my trucks how I like my women, with the least amount of silicone or plastic as possible. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, it's a lot easier to fix a vehicle that's a little bit more established than these new ones, where they get the slightest thing go wrong. Unless you understand basic computer software, you'll never figure out what's wrong with this damn thing. And then you send it to a place to get fixed, and they'll hit you over the head $150 an hour for something that probably only took 5 minutes. They'll charge you for 5 hours. So I mean, it's a joke. And plus the fact I don't trust the shit they're putting in these vehicles. They've got black boxes in some of them, and now we're starting to see. Biden is pushing regulations. Pretty soon he's going to basically order the auto manufacturers that they have to cease making gasoline engines and start making solely electric cars. I think if it comes to that point, I think we say, that's it, we're done, motherfucker. I mean, it's and he doesn't care. I mean, he knows he's going out. And the only reason why he's doing this shit is to protect his boy. But what he doesn't realize it is that once he's gone or he's no longer in a position of influence, they're going to take Hunter out. They're either going to indict that fucker or they're going to kill him. So it doesn't matter. So, I mean, the biggest thing is that and a lot of these world leaders that don't have children at all. Again, Kamala Harris doesn't have any children. You see the type of shit that they do. I mean, you had May there in Britain. You had Merkel for all those years in Germany. Macron. None of these fuckers have children. So they don't understand what it's like to have a family, really know what it's like to have to provide for your children and raise them and try to keep them straight. And hopefully they have a profession that rewards themselves. And not to mention, let's be quite honest, you can't rely on a pension system or a government system that's going to take care of your ass when you get old and elderly. Because what they're starting to see is, like in world communism, is once you stop working because of your health or your age, you're basically a burden. And they will find every excuse they had to get rid of you. Like, for example, here, I remember listening to Alex Jones years ago said, I never put that I'm an organ donor on my driver's license. Because if you get into a serious accident, they will not take extraordinary measures to save your life. Because your organs are more valuable when you're dead than you are alive. I was like, no shit. So after that, I stopped being an organ donor on my driver's license. And I know several friends that heard that too. And they don't put that shit on their driver's license either. So that's just little things you learn along the way to increase your valuability as an individual. Because really, in the 1930s, when we got issued Social Security numbers, that was our number to mark us for collateral. We became cattle when this country went bankrupt. And basically, Social Security numbers are, our collateral number. That's why they make it such a crime when you murder somebody, because you just killed a cash cow is what it is. But yet when you get these sick motherfuckers that do heinous crimes, now a lot of these states, even here in Ohio, they're trying to eliminate capital punishment. And I'm totally against that. I think some things are just evil and you need to just get rid of them. When they go and do heinous things to your child or mass killers, okay? They don't deserve to live 20, 30, 40 years in a fucking prison cell somewhere on a taxpayer's dime. Get rid of them.
I'm totally with you on capital punishment. There are lots of things that people need to be hanged for, especially treason. And there's so much freaking treason going on everywhere. And I must say, on technical topics, you and I see eye to eye. Your thing about the cars and being able to fix it, that's exactly how I function with cars and everything else. I do my own solar stuff and batteries and everything so that I know how to fix everything, because that's mm-hmm. the way you think. No, that other stuff is what I call junk capitalism. But, Sonny, I reckon that the only way this thing is going to end in America and everywhere else, in the end, it's going to be guns. In fact, I'll give you a quick quote from Hitler. I was reading a biography of one of Hitler's longest-serving secretaries, and she was saying that when Gandhi,
who they actually communicate with each other. Yes.
Well, listen to this, Gandhi. Gandhi is actually South African, by the way. And when Gandhi started his stuff of trying to get freedom in India, Hitler turned around and he was saying to the people, he said, He said, all this stuff about twirling sticks to get your freedom, that's a lot of nonsense. And Hitler said, don't support Gandhi. He said, if you want your freedom, you use guns. Adolf Hitler said that. Adolf Hitler said that. Your freedom, you only get it with guns, period. All other stuff's bullshit. And Sonny, the way I see it, all whites everywhere, it's going to eventually come down to that. We're going to have to shoot our way to freedom. There's nothing else.
Yeah, I just, there's a Mahatma Gandhi's letter to Adolf Hitler. This is interesting. This is, you are today the one person in the world who could prevent a war, read Gandhi's letters to Hitler, and basically said, I'm going to try to find the actual letter here real quick. I'd seen it. Here it is. Letter to Hitler, 1939. Dear friend, friends have been urging me to write to you for the sake of humanity, but I resisted their request because of the feeling that any letter from me would be an impertinence. Something tells me that I must not calculate and that I must make my appeal for whatever may be worth. It is quite clear you are today the one person in the world who can prevent a war, which may reduce humanity to the savage state. Must you pay that price for an object however worthy it may appear to you to be? Will you listen to the appeal of one who has deliberately shunned the method of war, not without considerable success? Anyway, I anticipate your forgiveness if I have erred you in writing to you. I remain your sincere friend, Herr Hitler, Berlin, Germany. And there's a letter to Hitler to 1940, and this goes a little bit more detail, but that is from Gandhi, and it's a little bit longer, but it's clear, obviously, they understood each other on many levels, but basically, and again, Hitler did not want a war. He was trying to avoid it. I mean, I got a collection of all his peace treaties from like the mid-1930s, even up until 1942, and He kept appealing to the British people. He's like, look, we are actually brothers we're cousins by blood because of the Viking blood that flows in our veins. You know, we are still one people, and that the real threat is the Bolsheviks. We need to turn and go east because that's the true threat. But unfortunately, Churchill was already owned by the Jews because when his disaster at Gallipoli. And that complete fuck up, Churchill was very much, pretty much almost exiled from all politics, dude. He's like, this guy's just a fuck up, you know? But the funniest thing is that Jews obviously kept him in order because of the fact that his manner and everything he held, he was bringing in a very meager sum of maybe 300 pounds of that. From writing like columns and shit, because he wrote a lot of columns and newspapers during the 1920s. And matter of fact, I just saw Europa, the last battle, we kept quoting a lot of his writings and stuff that Churchill was saying. Plus, he's talking about Freemasonry and things like that. But I mean, the thing was, he was generating very little money on the side, but was nowhere near the amount that he needed to keep his place up, pay for his staff, and all this other shit. So basically, on the side, the Jews put him on a payroll because they said, we'll have use for this guy someday in the future. And sure as shit, once Neville Chamberlain come back and says, I've got a paper here, blah, 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 blah. And then to find out that, you know, Germans invaded Poland and gave them basically 72 hours to get the fuck out, and they didn't do it. He said, we're now at war, but not only was Chamberlain already, he had cancer, so he wasn't able to fulfill, but then they get Churchill in there, and everyone kept going, why would you pick Churchill? Because the guys that run the whole damn show said, we've been putting this guy on his side for a while, and boom, they did it. Matter of fact, if you want to see a pretty good portrayal of Churchill, Gary Oldman does a very excellent version of him in a recent movie that he did. I actually saw it in a theater, and I was like, wow, he really nailed this guy down a little bit. But, you know, a lot of the rumors about him being a debutante, plus the fact that also he's a pedophile. A drunkard, a pedophile, all sorts of shit. So there's a lot of stuff about Churchill. And the funniest thing is now with all the Muslims starting to take over Britain, now they're attacking Churchill's statue because they see him, as a white man that needs to be eradicated from British history. So, you know, again, everything that Hitler warned would happen if they lost is coming true.
Absolutely. You know, the British, in winding up, I must say to you, from my studies of history, I've also been digging a lot more into the 1800s for some South African history that I'm doing. And, in the 1800s, after Napoleon, Britain was like the America of that time. For from then until World War I, Britain had almost the kind of power that America has now. And you know what? If the British, it, the British lost their empire by fighting Adolf Hitler, period. You can look at everything that happened to Britain. It all started because of World War II. The British lost everything by fighting the Germans and fighting Hitler. If they had not fought Hitler, the British Empire would still be around. We'd all be so much better off. Hitler would be
And
around.
not only that, they
I would.
nationalized all their infrastructure after the war. I mean, the railways, the airways, everything's nationalized, which is the very thing they claimed why they went after Germany for, was nationalizing all their shit.
I'm telling you, the British really need to look at themselves because they destroyed themselves through the stupidity of following Churchill. It didn't make Britain great. It destroyed everything. It destroyed the results of hundreds of years of effort. And because when it was over, the Soviet Union focused on destroying the British Empire and the European empires. The Jewish Bolshevism focused on destroying the European empires. It was insane. Germany didn't have an empire. Everybody else lost their empires just because they wanted to go and clobber the Germans. And so they've all paid the price. They've all paid
Now
the
that, but
price
look at the
for it.
propaganda that they did leading up to World War I. They kept depicting Germans as Huns with babies on bayonets. And it was like, why are you guys so threatened by Germany? Well, they were nations of scientists, they had philosophers, great music. I mean, they were a major competitor because Germany started actually doing some colonizing in Africa and in other places and stuff. So they were becoming a serious competitor. And they're like, oh no, we can't allow that shit to happen. Oh no. And so they've always demeaned Germans and Berlin in particular. So after World War I, again, the Germans didn't start World War I. The very reason why George Washington said trade with all, alliances with none, is exactly why Germany got pulled into that bullshit after the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated, because of the fact that they had a treaty with Austria, and Austria had agreed to help the other factions. And the next thing you know, it's like, well, everybody got pulled into it. But because Germany was being successful, it was like, well, how do we take care of this? We'll just take out the Kaiser. We'll cut off the head of the snake. And that's exactly what they did. They took out the Kaiser Wilhelm and said, if you don't get the fuck out of here, we're going to kill you. So he abdicated the throne. And within 2 to 3 days, they become the Weimar Republic. And then just as the Germans are getting ready to win victory on a battlefield, finally, they got the pavements pulled right out from under them. And it's like, it makes sense. And so you can see someone like Hitler, who was a proud German nationalist, even though he's Austrian, and he was wounded because of the gas and shit. Can you imagine the betrayal he felt, that his nation basically felt like he got betrayed by his own country? That, man, we could have won this motherfucker. And I can understand, and when he starts looking into it, he starts seeing who was pulling the strings. So, I mean, I can understand what drove that guy to finally achieve the ultimate peak of power.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, Hitler was a honest, patriotic guy just trying to save his people. Period. There's nothing more to it than that. So yeah, Sonny.
That's amazing. All right, brother. Well, it's been very good to hear from you again. And I want to encourage everybody to check out his website at historyreviewed.com. He also has some other links and videos and stuff that you can check on there. And I'm trying to get my thing launched here. Like I said, this thing's kind of slow. There are also very interesting stuff that I will post here in the show links. Some particular video links that he suggested that we check out. And Jan's very, very informative guy. And like I said, I've had other guests on who's actually referenced his website, as well as some of his work, and the fact that he's doing a good thing for us. As you can hear, he reminds everybody that we need to start looking after ourselves. I mean, I speak that very same thing here, brother. I always say, look, you know, we as whites need to start doing what the blacks did in the 40s and 50s. We need to start looking out for each other. And the problem is that most of the whites around here were still cutthroats. Because of the fact that we don't have much, they will deep six you, or they'll step on your back to get a better view. You know? And it's like, dude, I'm not your stepping stone, man. I'll help you up. It's like, but there's a difference. You know, the government gives you a hand out, a friend gives you a hand up. And I think that phrase means something to many of us. But the same stroke, we as individuals also have to prepare contingency plans because the system is getting ready to collapse, and that we have to start looking out for ourselves. And one of the things we've done in the heathen community is that we've tried to set up bug out situations. So when the shit starts to hit the fan, you've got people in different satellite areas within 150 miles of your range to be able to get to. Maybe one guy's got more concentration for food. Maybe the other guy's got better fortifications. Maybe one guy's got a good cache of armaments. Whatever the case may be, you need to make sure you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You want to actually go and make sure you've got contingency plans, because if all of a sudden all hell breaks loose in this direction, you can't get to plan A. You better have plan B, C, D, and E in place, so at least you can go in one direction. Make sure you got a four-wheel drive vehicle. Always keep your gas tank full. Things that matter, and a lot of us are starting to really get down to fumes, literally and figuratively, in their vehicles and their livelihoods, because we're hoping to just get by, but it's going to happen quick, Jan. We saw it in 08 when all of a sudden the housing crash. And I think now with the real estate crash, it's going to make it worse, because businesses are going to go out of business because maybe whoever owns that building can't pay the fucking taxes or the property stuff anymore. And next thing you know, we got to close this whole facility. Now you have a job because that company doesn't have the extra funds to relocate, or there's no place to relocate to. And then with building codes, oh, well, if you want to move here, you got to pay all this money to get up to code. So, I mean, it's completely counterproductive, but that's what they want. They want to destroy private property, that you cannot own anything. And that's what their biggest thing is in Agenda 2030, is that even Jamie Dimon was sitting there saying that basically that they want no one to own any private property.
Well, I must tell you, we are all ruled by hostile elites. And in our case in South Africa, we're ruled by an alien race that hates us. And you've got your own aliens over there. But the bottom line is that whites everywhere are actually ruled by an elite that hate them and see them as a threat, which is ridiculous, because the rest of the West is majority white. Yet you are all ruled by people who hate you. And at the end of the day, like I say, mass revolution is the only thing. And it's just going to take people to get angry enough. But it helps if people are educated and if people are thinking in the right direction. And don't worry, when things collapse, it also collapses for the other side as well. And take a look, for example, at FTX and that Jew running away with billions of dollars. And
yes.
That's the other thing you're going to see, is when things go wrong, I predict that we're going to see a lot more Weimar-type stuff where things go down and Jews run away with billions and billions of dollars. Look at that. What's that bank? Was it VBS or something? Or
yes.
SVB? I forget which one it is. I was reading that Jews in Israel formed like an emergency war room, and they sucked their billions out of that bank before it collapsed. So Jews are going to be hollowing things out as they run with the money and they get away from it. White people are going to find themselves in such a situation. I'm telling you, whites are going to be freaking angry. Whites are going to lose their shit. And, you know, over here in South Africa, where it's the blacks constantly beating up on us, and all governments beating up on us, crime, inefficiency, and it's always the white man's fault, it's always apartheid's fault. Let me tell you, it's going to come a time where people can't take it anymore. Same thing with you guys. I mean, all that freaking pedophilia, transgender, all this weirdo crap that's coming down. People are just not going to be able to take it eventually.
Well, yeah, that's what I'll point at. I think the backlash with the Bud Light situation is the beginning.
Yes.
And
yes.
Kudos to a lot of our entertainers that have stood up. I mean, Ted Nugent, Travis Tritt, Kid Rock, John Rich, a lot of these guys say, we're not taking that shit anymore, man. They've either completely eliminated, like John Rich has a bar or club or something in Nashville. He had all the Budweiser products pulled off and sent back.
Fantastic.
Travis Tritt said he's not going to have any more of these fuckers sponsoring his shit. And he put this guy said, well, what brands does Budweiser have? And he said, and they put back a meme that has all the brand names. And a couple of them I actually enjoy, like Stella Artois. I was like, well, I guess I won't be buying that shit anymore. I mean, you know, the other day I went to buy some beer and I made sure that it was not an Anheuser-Busch product. So I'm like, I'm not buying
Excellent.
That shit.
Excellent. So that's, you see, look at what COVID did, how people pushed back on COVID. I'm loving these things. Let them toss more things at people. Tell people you're going to have to get rid of your petrol powered car, and you're going to have to pay money. I mean, I was looking at here in South Africa, where we don't even have electricity, we've got people trying to sell electric cars, trying to get people to sell electric cars in a country where there isn't even enough power. Power, I mean, even in the time that we've recorded this show, the power's gone on and off. It's because all my stuff is running on my solar and my batteries. That's why we can do the show. But I mean, in here,
I just saw a story yesterday where a guy had to dump 1,500 liters of milk because of the refrigeration went bad on him.
Well, over here, every day without fail, we have a minimum of 2 power outages a day, minimum. And many people are the whites as usual are functioning. Most people have got a plan, okay? And you know, I want to tell you that just let them keep on beating up on us while they're failing and so forth. Whites are going to lose their shit. And the other thing is that whites also gain confidence in themselves and they get angry. Don't worry.
Yes.
You're gonna see it. You're going to see wild stuff. We're going to see wild stuff in our lifetimes. Thank God. I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss it. I want to tell you.
Well, I can also tell you, like, Lee Oxy Dupree runs the South Africa Famine Relief Project. Basically, they were given a little dirt patch of land and enough material to make some shanties. But they've come a long way with the resiliency of making them more livable. Even so much as when they can get the material from time to time, pouring some concrete bases so that way they can actually keep the waters from coming in when it rains, little things, farming, and they're cross-training a lot of the residents. So they teach them how to, you know, make certain foods, grow things, fix things, mechanic stuff. I mean, they're cross-training everything so they can, you know, one gentleman that was on there in his presentation was talking about how he was in a very well-to-do corporate job or something like that. And all of a sudden, they just come to one day and says, oh, sir, we got to let you go. We don't need your services anymore. He's like, why is that? Because you're white. And he's like, I don't know what to do. He's like, I've been working there for like, you know, 20-some-odd years, and I was hoping to retire within another 5-6 years. And it basically found out I was out of a job. He said, I lost everything. I couldn't pay any bills, and he ends up there. And but again, brain drain. You got a guy there who's got a lot of skills that he's learned that he's able to bring to that particular group and try to implement it in their situation. And I've seen, you know, some heathen groups around here. I've tried a couple of things where they try to bring communities together and basically help each other like a commune. You know, get a piece of land, try to build each other's structure on it and stuff like that. The problem is, though, sometimes they just can't get over the one-ups on everybody. But the biggest issue is that at least people are thinking in the right direction. They need to read history to see where they failed and where they've made positive advances that led to our civilization to today. Because some of those principles still matter.
Absolutely. Dead right. Dead right. And I hope that people will also watch that lecture that I gave in Canada, 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, and I hope you watch it. I think you people will be quite surprised by the few whites in Africa and how we fought for for such a small group.
I will definitely post a link in the show credits. That's for sure. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate talking to you again. And I encourage everybody to go to his website at historyreviewed.com. He has a lot of information there, as well as links to easily share the videos and articles as well. And he doesn't just cover things in South Africa. He's got stuff from all over the world. So definitely want to encourage people to go to the website and push it in all different forms of social media, because he'll see those metrics as they move along. And again, information is the key. And the most important thing is, and I've said this over and over again, you want as much information as much as possible, because one day they're going to pull this plug. We saw it during in all over the Muslim world, like in Egypt, they were trying to kill the internet. We saw it in what's the name of that one country? Where they basically was cutting off all the social media. We also saw it in Iran during when Ahmadinejad actually looked like he was going to steal the election. They weren't allowing foreign media to go past a certain point, but it was Iranians tweeting out that was telling us what was going on, that they were stealing the election there. So again, these are all beta tests to see how things they could do. We have to make sure that we can turn this up, because we saw in France how they were shutting off social media as well. But they are trying to create – Obama wanted that more than anything. He wanted an internet kill switch. And we saw it there in other countries during other uprisings and shit. So, again, you cannot believe at any given moment you make a phone call. Just like any natural disaster, all the power could be taken out. So you have to have up-to-the-minute information as much as possible and be informed, because things can change very quickly. And if they turn the power off you're only going to go by the most recent thing that you've encountered. And so, but I encourage everybody to forward the links. He's also got contact information on there. So if you have any things as well, you can also forward it to him. And we got to help each other out. You know, other guys listen to my show, bring Young on to your show, man, because of the fact that he has valuable information to share to our people. And again, I've had guests on my show that disagree with 90-95% of my platform, but on one or two issues we're completely in sync on, and that I've helped expose a lot of shit going on. And so, again, we can agree to disagree on many things, but when the things that we do agree on, we need to completely snowball this into a huge avalanche, because that's the only way change is going to happen, is by getting information out and getting it says. Like I said, there was a famous quote from Star Trek when Captain Kirk was in the mirror universe, when he's telling the mirror Spock, he said, in every revolution, there's one man with a vision. And that's true. That is true. Whether it was Marxism, whether it was National Socialism, whether it was Italian Fascism, or whether it was the American Republic. There was one man with a vision, and one man actually pushed it. In our case, most people don't realize that John Adams was the major component to pushing the American Revolution, getting the states to work with each other, picking Washington as the general, picking Jefferson as the writer of the Declaration, and everything else that formed the foundations of this country. And that man got overlooked because during president, he pushed the Alien Sedition Acts. Well, basically said you couldn't talk shit about your president. And they said, hey, that was the whole reason why we fought a revolution. There's freedom of speech. So he got slammed down between the Adams and Jefferson campaign, and has still the nastiest presidential campaign in the history of this country. And they let all the fucking dirt of the laundry out. That is actually a very interesting topic to read. But again, people like myself, like Jan, whatever the case may be, if – and I said this over and over, if Alex Jones goes down or Andrew England goes down, internet information will be completely controlled. So you need to support those websites. You may not agree with those guys say, but you have to respect the fact that they're still out there saying it every day. Jan's got his site. I have my show. I have my network. Now, any of this can be shut down at any given time. Take to heart what we told you, because of the fact that when the shit hits the fan, you better know who your neighbor is. You better know if you can trust them, or you better need to shoot that motherfucker, because I'll tell you what, they will rat you out in a heartbeat if they are the enemy. And they will. They could just save their own ass or to get a bag of rice. They will give you up to give themselves one extra day of food. Believe me, it's a human condition. It will happen. So, Jan, thank you very much for coming back on the show and sharing us your thoughts, brother.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor being with you and very interesting talking to you. Thank you for everything, Sonny.
Okay, talk to you again soon.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.